And good morning to you. You are listening to listener-supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College, WHFR Dearborn. We are listener-supported non-commercial radio, and being that it is 10 o'clock on a Tuesday morning, very warm Tuesday morning, we're here for another Radio Vault session with you. We're going to kick it off momentarily with an episode of Fibber McGee and Company. Now, Molly, who is the wife of Fibber McGee, Jim Jordan, was actually out ill for a season or two or three. This is just before she came back the next season, 1939. Anyway, in this episode, we're gonna hear how Fibber kind of plans his vacation. This show is from June of 1938. How about that, huh? And it was also known as the Johnson Wax program. Johnson Wax sponsored the show pretty much from the beginning through its duration, all the way up until the 1950s. And then it became a 10-minute feature on NBC Monitor, but Fibber McGee and Molly, as it was usually known as, was with NBC the whole time. So we'll hear that for our first feature. For our second feature, we go to the show that was always competing with Fibber McGee for the number one spot. And that's Jack Benny. We'll hear an episode of Jack Benny. And how he's planning his summer vacation. Hour number two for today's show. Now, Jack Benny did Las Vegas appearances a few times a year. We will hear a recording of the very last Jack Benny Las Vegas appearance. He wasn't really a stand-up comedian, but he tells lots of stories of his life. We'll hear his last appearance, and that was in 1972. It was in November. And finally, for hour number three, the Lux Radio Theater. You knew it, right? Based on the movie Casablanca, they couldn't get Humphrey Bogart to recreate his role on radio for whatever reason. But they did get a very capable actor, so we'll be hearing Casablanca from 1944 and lots of wartime announcements on this episode. So once again, welcome to Radio Vault, the June 24th edition, 2025. So if you're ready, I think we're ready.
Tonight, the makers of Johnson's Wax present the first in new series of radio dramas, Attorney at Law. The story and adventures
hey,
of one...
Hey, wait a minute. What's the idea? Hold everything, Harlow. Hey, what's going on here anyway?
Why, Fibber, you're in Colorado.
I am?
Sure.
Well, then who's this wearing my pants? I am not in Colorado. I'm right here.
Now, take it easy.
Well, gee whiz.
But after all, my schedule says you're in Colorado on your vacation. So tonight, we're beginning the new Johnson Summer Show, Attorney at Law.
Okay, Harlow. Okay. If you say so, I am in Colorado. But don't be surprised if we get back while Billy Mills plays the opening number. What's it going to be?
Anything goes.
Come on, Sil. Let's get a running start down Pike Peak.
Hey,
Well, here we are, Harlow. We made it.
Get there. Yeah, we admit it, Wilcox. But I sure had to leave Colorado. That's a real pretty place.
Well, as long as you're here, you'd better get on with the show.
Okay, Harlow. Hey, who put this microphone up so high? I can't reach it.
Oh, I'm sorry, Fibber. We had to raise the mic a little for Mr. Hunter.
Hunter? What is this, a game preserve? And where's that music rack I always lay my script on? And the little rag rug?
Oh, those. Mr. Hunter had them removed.
Say, who is this guy, Hunter, and what rights he got to be butting into this? What's going
on? Don't you know? He's the young movie star we brought in from Hollywood to play the lead in Attorney at Law, our summer show. Nice guy, too.
Oh, yeah. Movie actor, huh? One of them profile boys with an open collar shirt and a slave bracelet, huh?
No, he isn't like that, but he is handsome. And can he act?
And he's the one that's going to take my place this summer, huh?
Yes. By the way, how long is your vacation?
9 weeks, Harlow. And I need every day of it, too. I'm all wore out.
Yeah, that's what I've heard people say.
Yep. What you mean by that, Crack?
Well, I was going to say, I hope your job is still here when you come back in the fall.
You mean they might keep this Hunter on instead of me?
Yes, I do.
Well, come to think of it, Harlow, 9 weeks vacation is really more than anybody really needs. 6 or 7 weeks would do me just as well. No use being selfish about this thing. I can...
Pardon me, but is this the Henry Hunter program?
No, Dad Bratted, it ain't. This is the Fibber McGee program.
Oh, yes, that's the program that'll substitute for Mr. Hunter during the winter.
Yeah. Say, sis, who are you?
Why, I'm a... Oh, hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Well, hello there, Betty. Fibber, this is Miss Betty Winkler, who will play opposite Mr. Hunter on the Attorney at Law show. Oh. Betty, this is Fibber McGee, who used to be on this program.
Oh, I see. Well, how do you do, Mr. McGibber?
McFibber, sis. McGee. Hey, what you mean used to be on this show, Harlow?
Oh, I just meant you were taking a vacation.
Oh.
How long are you taking, Mr. McGibber?
McGee, sis. Well, I don't know. I'd planned on 9 weeks, but shucks, 4 or 5 weeks is all I need. Just to relax a little is all. Hey, where are you going, sis?
Well, I must go and speak to Mr. Hunter. He'll be so amused to know I met you. Come on, Mr. Wilcox.
So, Hunter will be amused, will he? Attorney of the law. Listen, Sil, I got to put this Hunter guy in his place, you see?
Well, how are you going to do that?
Well, the first thing, when we're introduced, I'll give him the old squeeze handshake. You know, shake hands with him and squeeze it till he hollers?
Yeah.
You guys are all a bunch of sissies. Then he'll start talking about what he done in pictures, and that's where you come in.
I do?
Yeah. When I ask you how my picture is doing, you say, Paramount says it's still tops at the box office. You got that?
That's what I said.
Yes. Now remember, Paramount says it's still tops at the box office. You got it?
Yes, sir.
Good. Now, when that...
Say, Fibber, I want you to meet Mr. Henry Hunter.
Well... Hello, Fibber. Hello. I've heard a lot about you. I'm glad to meet you.
Hi, bud. What was the name again?
Hunter. Henry Hunter.
Henry's doing the Attorney at Law show, Fibber. Remember?
Oh, yes. Well, how are you, Hunter? Shake hands.
Ow! Oh, I'm so sorry. Did I hurt your hand?
Oh, no. That hand's got a little touch of writer's cramp from signing autographs. That's something you'll have to get used to in this business,
yes,
Hunter.
Yes, yes, I know. I understand you've done some picture work, too.
Who, me? Oh, shucks. Hunter, you see them there, 2 fingers there? Well, me and Adolph Zucker is just like that there.
I'll write to Mr. Zucker and tell him he needs a manicure. What was your last picture, Fibber?
Why, shucks, I don't know. I made so many pictures, it's kind of... Hey, Sil, how's that last picture of mine doing?
Paramount say it still flops at the box office.
By the way, how long is your vacation, Fibber?
Oh, I don't know, Hunter. certain things has come up. That is, I don't think I ought to stay away too long. Well, I don't know. I think I'll just take a couple of weeks. That's enough vacation for anybody.
Well, I don't know about that. You've been on the air now about 6 or 7 months, haven't you?
6 or 7 months? We've been on the air for 167 consecutive broadcasts.
Really?
Really.
Well, say, you've earned a vacation. I think you'd better take a good long rest. Well, it's nice to meet you, Fibber. See you later.
Well, how did you like him, Fibber? Nice looking fellow, isn't he?
Oh, I suppose. In a kind of a flashy way.
Hello, Fibber.
Oh, Billy Mills.
How are you enjoying your vacation?
Dad, Reddit, I ain't on my vacation. This is still my show till after tonight, you see?
Well, all right. Well, but say, is that attorney at law program? Boy, it's colossal.
Sounds kind of dull to me. Attorney at law. Legal stuff.
Oh, yeah? Listen, Fibber. After he's been on a couple of weeks, you'll need a writ of replevin to get your program back.
Oh, yeah? Don't make me laugh, Mills. Hey, Harlow, how do you get a writ of replevin?
I don't know, but I'll ask Hunter.
No. Don't do that. Don't.
By the way, Fibber, how long a vacation are you taking?
Well, Billy, I'll tell you. I was planning on a few weeks, but certain things have come up. I mean, I might be well advised to cut it a little short, so... Oh, well, I don't know. I think I better just take Saturday afternoon off. Go ahead, Billy. Sil, you got to help me pack up for this vacation.
Yes. Would you really scare Mr. Hunter to get you a job while you were gone, sir?
Oh, shucks, no, Sil. I was just kidding. I hope. Me and Molly are going to take a long vacation and enjoy ourselves.
Yes. You're going to go on a long trip?
Well, yes and no, Sil.
Yes and no?
Yes and no. Yes, if I do what I want to, and no, if it costs what I think it's going to. What you gonna do, Sil?
Oh, I don't know, Mr. McGee. As long as we get 9 weeks off, I think I'll spend the first week putting up a hammock and the next 8 sleeping in it.
Well, personally, I'm gonna fish, Sil, for big fish. Did you locate my fishing tackle?
Well, no, sir, but here's a real pretty traveling folder all about a trip to Guam. Here.
Well, that ain't Guam, that's Guam. That's near the island of Wacky.
That ain't Wacky, that's Wake.
Oh. Well, there's great fish in there anyway. You know, Sil, there's something about fish that gets you.
Yes, sir, there sure is, unless you put them right on ice.
Come in.
Hello there, Johnny. What you doing?
Fixing up stuff for my vacation, old-timer.
Me?
I said, hey, what did you want anyway?
Heard you were going fishing, Johnny. Wondered if you wanted to buy a pair of hip boots. sell them to you cheap.
There must be something wrong with them.
There is. They leak.
Well, what would I want with them then?
You could use them out west, Johnny. Some of them streams have dried up.
Well, that's a very constructive thought. You haven't got a good canoe I could use on the Lincoln Highway, have you?
That's pretty good, Johnny. But that ain't the way I heard it. The way I heard it, one feller says to the other feller, "See," says, "see where the automobile company that broadcast the Lewis Smelling fight only had time to get in two commercial announcements." "That's so," says the other feller. "How can they run an 8-cylinder car on only 2 plugs?" Smelling too, Johnny, but I didn't say he could take any more ribbing.
Say, Fibber, have you decided yet where you'll spend your vacation?
Well, no, Harlow, I ain't. All I know is I'm going where there's some fishing.
Well, I'm going on a whaling expedition myself.
A whaling expedition? Where'll I address it?
In that white space right under the stamp.
That white space under the... Well, that's taken care of for 9 weeks. Hey, Sil, you seen anything of my dry flies?
Dry flies?
Yeah, sure, you know. Them little feathery things you catch tree branches with when you cast for trout?
No, Mr. McGee, I don't know where that is. But I was reading in a paper where a man invented artificial bait that you can squeeze out of a little tube.
Oh, no. Not for me. I had a tube of that stuff, and I brushed my teeth with it by mistake one morning.
Did it make you feel bad?
Well, no, but when I walked past the fish market, I had a feeling I was being followed. What I really like, Sil, is freshwater fishing. I mind one time I took a boat from Hackensack to Mackinac.
And back?
Hackensack to Mackinac and back. If I'd have had a sailboat, I could have tacked to Mackinac and back to Hackensack. Say, let's kick that around a little bit, Sil. I think we got something there.
Hello, Fibber. What's up?
Oh, hi, Clark. Me and Sil are fixing up my stuff for a fishing trip.
Gee, that's great. Mm-hmm. What kind of fish you going after?
Old trout, bluegills, perch. I'm quite a percher myself. Yes, and a great bluegiller, too.
How about pike?
Oh, yes, I'm quite a piker, too. What you going to sing, Clark?
Smoke gets in your eyes.
Oh, that's right. Folks, Clark Dennis, who has done such a great job on this program for the last year, sings Smoke Gets in Your Eyes, which was especially requested. Go ahead, Clark.
Flame high.
Beautifully done. Thank you, Clark. Don't go too far away now. We'll need you again in September. Now, let's see. I got to get that stuff.
Well, hello there, Fizzer and Silly Puss. What are you hanging yourself around here for? Aren't you supposing to be on a vacation, or am I labeling under a Miss Apple Dumpling?
You're a week off, Nick. I don't leave till next week.
And what is Mr. Johnson doing with the radio program? How is he telling everybody what kind of a Johnson's waxing to put on the linoleum bum?
Oh, they're putting on a great dramatic show this summer, Nick. Attorney at Law. Say, what's that book you got there, Nick?
Oh, this is a book I am loaning to me from the public raspberry. It is calling itself on the title page by the name of Jack and the Bumstick.
Oh, yes, I read that years ago. Now, if you don't mind, I got to make
You see, in this story, there is being a little boy, and his name is Jack.
Yes.
And he is going to the marketplace to sell the cow because old Mother Hubble, who was not pitching for the Giants then, is going to the cupboard, and the cupboard is bare, so she is not giving the poor dog a bone to pick with you, and so Jackie is selling the heifer for whatever you can get with the bull market. You grab me?
Yeah, I know. He sold the cow for a handful of beans, didn't he?
Sure.
Yeah.
And when Jack is going home that night, his mama is saying, "Where is the money you were having for the cow, Squeegee?" And Jackie is being very well read in his face because he knows that a hat full of beans is not an aqueduct crisis for a cowhide which is still having a cow inside of it.
Yeah, I remember. And when he gave the beans to his mother, she tossed them out the window.
Sure.
Yeah.
And in the morning, when he is seeing in the garden but a bean sprite, which is sticking up out of the mother's earth and growing as fast as water off a back's duck.
Well, never mind the rest of it, Nick. I got to see about this fish.
Well, sure, Peter. The reminder of the story is being so exciting, I'm trembling in every limerick. It seems that this little boy, Jackie, is being a very impulsive kiddo, mm-hmm. So he is skinning up the bumstick like a chipmunky up a strapling.
He probably thought they were navy beans and was looking for the crow's nest.
Oh, don't tell me, Fizzer. I want it to be a surprise to you. Well, sir, then he is meeting a giant in it who is saying, "Fee-fi-fo-fum. I smell you, Jackie, you little bum." And he is, too.
Yeah, but Chucks, Nick, everybody's heard about Jack.
What, sir? The giant is chasing Jack in the bumstick, and Jack is grabbing me a big jackpot of 14-carat gold pieces, and is sliding down the bumstick like a fireman going to a false alarm, with the giant chasing him because he is as mad as a hairnet.
Mad as a hornet.
Have it my way. And when Jack is getting safely to the bottom of the bumstick, he is giving his mama the gold pieces, and she is saying, "Now we are having to plant another bean, so you can go and get some silver, because the government is not letting people have some gold pieces, you bad boy."
Well, so long, Nick. I gotta fix this fishing tackle up.
So long, Fizzer. I hope I will see you again in September, unless this retorniate lawyer is being so good that Mr. Johnson is being satisfied with the bird in the hand and is giving you the bird in the bushes.
Folks, our quartet, The Four Notes, aided and abetted by Billy Mills, sing Johnny One Note. Pay it off, kids.
Johnny could only sing one note, and the note he sang was this. Oh, poor Johnny One Note sang out with gusto and just overlorded the place. Poor Johnny One Note yelled willy-nilly until he was blue in the face. For holding one note was his aim. Couldn't hear the brass, couldn't hear the drum. He was in the class by himself by gum. Poor Johnny One Note got in Aida, indeed a great chance to be brave. He took his one note, howled like the north wind, brought forth wind that made pretty craze. While Birdie turned round in his grave, couldn't hear the flute or the big trombone. Everyone was mute. Johnny stood alone. Cats and dogs stopped the yapping. Lions too were reading. Thunderclaps stopped the clapping. Traffic ceased to roar. Train whistles, boat whistles, steam whistles, cop whistles, bow to his skill. Oh, sing Johnny One Note, sing out with gusto, and just overwhelm all the crowd. Sing Johnny One Note, sing out with gusto, and just overwhelm all the crowd. So sing Johnny One Note out loud. Sing Johnny One Note.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bibber has an important announcement to make at the end of this program. Be sure to hear it.
Well, come on, Sil. Let's get this fishing tackle all in one pile so that...
Yeah, I sure wish I had gone with you this summer.
Oh, me too, Sil. It's going to be wonderful. Wading up a burbling brook, fighting my way past submerged logs, snakes, boulders, mosquitoes, and all stuff like that there.
Wait, the mosquitoes where you going?
Yeah, but I got a mosquito lotion I mixed up myself. It's a compound of sulfurous oxidate with the infusion of carboarsenic in solution.
Well, do it keep mosquitoes off?
No, but it makes your face feel so numb you don't notice them. I remember a little crouch. Come in.
Hello there, Fibber.
Oh, Henry Hunter. Hi, Henry, old man.
Well, I see you're all set for a good summer of fishing. I used to do a good deal of that when I was in college.
Oh, you did, eh? Where'd you go to college, Henry?
In England.
Oh, yes. That was one of the movies you made, wasn't it, Henry? Hank at Oxford?
No, I just came in to wish you a very pleasant vacation, Fibber.
Well, thanks, Henry, and I hope you have a lot of success with attorney at law. I know you will.
You have to. Me too, Mr. Hunter, please.
Well, thank you, Fibber. And thank you, too, sir.
You know, I'll be listening to your show, Henry. You better be good on that legal stuff, because I'll be checking up.
Oh, are you a legal expert?
Am I? Why, Bud, I've been a legal expert ever since I was just a boy. Why, even then, my name was news. Every time I appeared in court, it was plastered on every front page. Court Plaster McGee, I was known as in them days. Court Plaster McGee, the cleverest kid who ever kept a culprit from cooling in the calaboose, keen and cunning at coaxing clemency for my client by catching cagey cushions in contempt of court with my confusion cross-questioning, and collecting a colossal commission in the capacity of counselor, consulted by corporation capitalists, crafty criminals, and contemporary colleagues, and commonly considered by correspondents and critics as the King Kong of the courtroom, from the kangaroo courts of the California cattle country to the caper-cutting constables of Colonial Connecticut. There you are, jurisprudence. Kick that around till September.
Oh, sure.
Well, folks, we've got a delightful surprise for you tonight, and I hope you'll all be as happy about it as I am. So many of you have inquired about Molly that I thought I'd get the best possible authority to answer you. Molly herself, and here she is.
For me.
Well, it ain't for me.
It ain't funny, McGee. Well, folks, even though we're leaving for our summer vacation tonight, I just felt I had to come down and thank all of you for your wonderful letters and interest and all, and for being so nice to McGee while I was off the show. I hope you all have a pleasant summer and that we'll all be together again in September. By the way, McGee, there's somebody else here who wants to see you.
Huh? Who? Oh, hi, little girl.
Are you going on a vacation, are you,
You betcha, sis. Why'd you ask?
Sure.
Huh? Listen, you asked me if... I mean, you're the one... Well, why'd you want to know if I was going on a vacation?
Well, gee, I guess all the radio people are, betcha. Jack Benny and Eddie Cantor and Joe Penner and Town Hall tomorrow night and Good News and
Fibber McGee.
Sure, that's the good news. So long, mister.
So long, sis. Well, good night.
Good night, all.
Speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax and Glow Coat at Racine, Wisconsin, inviting you to be with us next Tuesday night at the same time when we bring you the first in a new series of thrilling dramatic stories, Attorney at Law, starring Henry Hunter with Betty Winkler. Until next Tuesday night, then, good night. The collection of smoke gets in your eyes is over. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
right. We had to wait for the NBC chimes. There you have it. Fibber McGee and Company from June 28, 1938. You are listening to Radio Vault on 89.3 WHFR, the station making waves. And we wave this show every Tuesday between 10 in the morning and 1 o'clock. Up and coming next, one of the Jack Benny shows. This is a summer vacation show, but it happened during... The broadcast happened during October of 1940. And we'll get to that momentarily. This is Radio Vault on WHFR.
Thematic. Heard on Wednesdays from 12 to 4. Thematic. Music and themes and so much more. Sometimes things can get dramatic, and sometimes things can get rather silly. But one thing's for sure, Phil Mack will guide you through and try to leave you feeling giddy, and try to leave you feeling happy. Thematic. Heard on Wednesdays from 12 to 4.
Views, the classics,
and so much more. Thematic.
Woo! Catch Thematic with Phil Mack every Wednesday from 12 to 4.
Founded in 2016 and sponsored by the Detroit Regional Chamber of Commerce, the Detroit Promise ensures that any student graduating from any high school in the city of Detroit will have a tuition-free path to an associate degree or technical certificate. Henry Ford College has been a proud participant in the Detroit Promise since the beginning. With 66% of all Detroit Promise students attending HFC, it is the largest Detroit Promise enrollment of any college. For more information, visit hfcc.edu/Detroit-Promise or DetroitPromise.com today.
It is the sixth day of October, and Jell-O is back on the air. But where are all our little playmates? Where are Donzie and Filzy, and Mary and Dennis, and Jackie Boy? Ah me, they're still asleep. For 15 weeks, they have been in the arms of Morpheus. Wake up! Wake up, little playmates! Alas, they do not heed my summons. However, we must get them up. But how? How can we awaken our master of ceremonies? How can we arouse Jackie Boy?
Drop a quarter.
You're asleep.
Alas, my efforts are unavailing. If only someone with magic powers would assist me. But who? Who will it be?
I'll help you, kid. With my magic wand, I will awaken them.
You will awaken them? Who are you?
I am the Blue Fairy.
Then you must hurry, O Blue Fairy. Wake them all and do not tarry.
Fear not, my friend. I'll fly away. All of me and that ain't hay. Well, here I go.
Goodbye, Blue Fairy.
So long, kid.
Hmm.
Phronsie. Wake up, Don Wilson, you big lug. It's time we heard a jello plug.
Oh, thanks, Blue Fairy. I heed your call. Hand me my girdle from off the wall.
Here you are. Oh, Dennis, stay. Jump out of bed. On your feet, not on your head.
Oh, I'm tired.
Dennis, wake up and get dressed.
But gee whiz, Ma, I'm sleepy.
Dennis, say you get right over to the studio. Mr. Benny will be furious if you're late.
Okay. Do I have to wash behind my ears?
What for? He doesn't.
That's a lie. That woman better watch out.
Oh, little Phil Harris, come blow your horn. The cows in the meadow, the sheep in the corn.
Corn? That got him. Who are you, babe?
I am the Blue Fairy.
Well, come on in. This is a fantasy.
Sound asleep in the land of Nod. But I, the Blue Fairy, will awaken her.
Some fairy. She couldn't fly with three motors.
Mary, don't spoil the illusion.
This is a fine way to start our first program.
Well, can you think of something better?
Anything.
Oh, go ahead, Fairy, and wake her up.
When is she going to wake up the audience?
Never mind. Get going, Fairy.
Oh, Mary Liv, it's time you woke and told us all a funny joke. So open your eyes and don't be drowsy.
Oh, boy, what a lead.
Give me that one.
Ouch.
All right, now wake me up.
Jack Benny snores so rich and deep. For 15 weeks, he's been asleep. But now he must awake, you know, and run his good old jello show. Awake, awake, awake. The sun is sleeping on the hill and birds are singing by the mill. For safe, for safe, for safe, I slumber with old Jack Benny. Wake up.
I don't know. Hey, Eddie, will he ever wake up?
I don't know.
Hey, Bill, will he ever wake up?
I don't know. Hey, Sam!
Never mind, I'm up!
My goodness!
Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens the program with Shout, I Am an American. Friends, I know you're all anxious to get on with the show, and so for that reason, I'm not going to take the time right now to tell you about Jell-O. American played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the first time this season, I bring you a man who returns to the air fresh as a daisy, gay as a daffodil, modest as a violet, and rugged as a sweet pea, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you. Jello again, this is your favorite flower talking. And Don, before we go any further, what did you think of that novel opening to our first program? You know, where we're all supposed to be asleep for 15 weeks. Wasn't that whimsical?
It certainly was, Jack.
And clever, too. You know, I wrote and produced it myself. Did you like the idea of the Blue Fairy?
Yes, that was novel. Who is she, anyway?
Well, I don't know her name, Don, but she came to us through the courtesy of the Great Lakes Dredge and Dock Company. Her freight bill was something awful in there. Well, anyway, Don, here we are starting our seventh season for Jell-O. For 7 years, you and I and our little gang have been with the same sponsor.
Yes, sir. 7 years on one job.
You know, Don, we're either loyal or in a rut. But who knows, we might be with the same sponsor 7 more years. Or 10. Or 20.
If he ever tunes in on us, we're cooked.
Well, look who's here. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Mary. Hello. How are you?
Well, did you hear that ovation, Mary? Applause, cheers, whistles. I can't understand it.
I can.
Same modest, assuming, unassuming little girl, huh? Fine thing for you to say.
Aw, Jack, who are you kidding? Every actor loves applause, and you know it.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
Mary's right, Jack. There's a certain amount of ego in every one of us.
Now, wait a minute, Don. I was in vaudeville for a good many years, and my only thought was to entertain. Applause meant absolutely nothing to me.
Oh, no? Tell them about the time you're going to kill yourself in Toledo.
Well, even the ushers didn't applaud there. Besides, I had no intention of killing myself.
And what were you doing with that rope in your dressing room?
I hung my laundry on it. Well, let's not start our first program by being personal. Let's talk about something else. What'd you do this summer, Mary?
I was asleep till that dredge woke me up.
Now, cut that out. You're not supposed to take that literally. It was just a delightful fantasy.
Why, Jack, you ought to be ashamed of yourself writing a corny thing like that.
Who said I wrote it?
You did.
Oh. Well, as long as I'm trapped, I wrote the music, too. Anyway, it was a very novel opening for our first program, and I'm proud of it.
Proud of it? Why, it didn't even make sense.
Oh, it didn't, eh? Well, they said the same thing about A Midsummer Night's Dream. And look how successful that was.
Yeah, I hear Shakespeare just built a home in Brentwood.
That's Abe Shakespeare from Universal. Anyway, Mary, you don't appreciate how hard it is to get new ideas and things. You know, Don, I sat up night after night working on an idea.
Hey, Jack.
What?
Here comes Sierra Sue.
Oh, yes. Hello, Phil.
Hiya, folks. Here's the man you've been waiting for. Get them hands out of your pockets. Well, Phil, hello.
Hi, Don. Hi.
Oh, sure. He would ask for it.
I appreciate that, folks. You know, applause is food for an actor, so thanks for the lunch. Ha ha, it's a Lulu.
Well, you didn't disappoint us, Phil. You came right back the way you left. Not a kernel missing. Well, Phil, I hear you had another successful tour this summer on those one-night stands.
Yes, sir. We covered about 16,000 miles, one town after another.
Boy, that's what I call a tough grind. I wouldn't go through that for all the money in the world.
What?
You heard me. I don't know how that guy does it. Phil, why do you only stay one night in a town and then move on?
Love 'em and leave 'em, that's my motto.
I know, I saw a tattooed on your chest. You know, Phil, you ought to take a vacation in the summer instead of working and traveling around the country. Look at those bags under your eyes.
Oh, they're not so big.
I like to have them full of radium, that's all.
Bruv.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. I look all right, and so do my boys. Why don't you say something about the new suits they're wearing?
Well, I've got to admit, they're all spruced up today. I notice another thing. They smell so sweet.
Why, sure. They all got perfume on.
Perfume, eh? That's all right.
You'll never replace the old-fashioned bathtub.
Never mind. With them, I'll settle for anything. But at that, Phil, I must compliment you on the way.
Say, Jack.
What?
Here comes Baby Dumpling.
Oh, yes. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, well, hello, Benny.
Well.
Gee, was all that applause for me?
Yes, sir, Dennis. Every bit of it. The people are glad to see you back again.
Then I ought to get more dough.
Sit down, you money-mad ham. It's a fine entrance you made, Dennis. The first crack out of the box, you want more money. You know, this is only your second year in show business, and if you ask me, you're doing all right.
Well, Kenny Baker's got a yacht.
Never mind Kenny Baker. And it leaks. More money, more money. Let me tell you a little story, Dennis. Something you ought to know and think about. When I was a kid your age, life wasn't as easy for me as it is for you. Well, I used to walk around the streets of Waukegan selling newspapers. I was hungry. Yes, and I was barefoot.
I bet it was snowing, too.
You said it. Why, Dennis, when I used to come home at night after tramping the streets all day selling those papers, my little feet were swollen and bleeding.
Where'd you get the blood?
I had it then. But I was happy, Dennis. Happy because I was struggling to achieve success, slow but sure. And that's why you should be happy, too.
Gee, I'm sorry, Mr. Benny. Maybe I ought to take a cut.
A cut?
Look at his ears go up.
They didn't budge. Now listen, Mary, I wasn't going to mention it because I wanted to be a surprise to the whole gang. But when you each get your check tomorrow, you'll find a raise. A substantial increase.
I don't believe it, but say it again.
Well, don't act so surprised. I gave you all a raise last year, didn't I?
Sure, but right afterwards you sold a stock in your ostrich farm.
My ostrich farm? What's wrong with that? They lay eggs every day of the week.
And on Sunday you take over.
Mary, May Company. Now, Dennis, if you can forget about Kenny Baker's yacht long enough, how about singing a song for us?
Okay.
Go ahead, Dennis. Wait a minute. Come in.
Pardon me, are you Jack Benny?
Yes.
My name is Gross. Do you mind if I ask you a few questions?
Why, no, I'm never too busy for an interview.
Well, first of all, what are your plans on the radio this year?
Oh, I don't know. We're going to keep about the same formula and style as in the past. Yet, we hope to be topical and keep up with the time.
I see. And, are you planning any out-of-town trips during the season?
Well, we'll stay here in Hollywood until the middle of December, and then we'll probably go to New York for a month.
A month, eh?
Yes.
That'll bring you back
the middle of January.
I see. And, are you going to close up your house in Beverly Hills while you're away?
Yes, I intend to. Yes.
Well, I think that about covers everything. Thanks very much, Mr. Benny.
You're welcome. Oh, by the way, what paper are you with?
None. I'm a burglar. Goodbye.
Hey, come back here. Well, of all the nerve. Sing, Dennis.
Oh, Jack.
What?
You better take your mattress to the bank tomorrow.
I will. Don't worry.
Well,
day you promised to come back to me. When you whispered farewell in Capistrano, 'twas the day the swallows flew out to the sea. All the mission bells will ring, the chapel choir will sing, the happiness you'll bring will live in my memory. When the swallows come back to Capistrano, that's the day I pray that you come back to me. While the altar candles burn, my heart is burning too. If you should not return, I'll still be waiting for you. When the swallows come back to Capistrano, that's the day I pray that you come back to me.
Very good, Hannah. That was When the Swallows Come Back to Capistrano, sung by Dennis Day. And accompanied by Phil, I'll play any town under 2,000 Harris. And Dennis, that was really a beautiful number.
Thank you, Mr. Benny.
And I love the thought, when the swallows come back to Capistrano. Don, isn't that a grand title? Don, when the swallows come back to Capistrano.
Oh, Jack, please.
Don, are you rebelling?
No, but I just think...
Don! When the swallows come back to Capistrano.
Okay, okay. Ladies and gentlemen, whenever you swallow a dessert, make sure that it is genuine jello.
That's better.
Whether you live in Capistrano or San Luis Obispo, always come back to your neighborhood grocer and ask him for a package of tempting economical jello. It comes in 6 delicious flavors. So remember.
All right, Dennis.
Oh, I don't wanna.
Dennis.
Okay. When the swallows come back to Capistrano,
you will find that jello's waiting there for you. Oh, Capistrano.
There, that wasn't such a bad plug, was it? Did you write that, Jackson? I certainly did.
Take a bow and I'll punch you right in the nose.
Why don't you? Anyway, that was smart writing, Mary. You know, Don, I'm going to do a lot of that stuff this coming season. Write clever commercials and fantasies, all kinds of sketches and things.
It's a lot of work, isn't it?
Oh, I don't mind. In fact, I get a kick out of it. Hey, Jackson, what's the idea of all this writing all of a sudden?
Last Tuesday, he found a fountain pen.
That has nothing to do with my talent. Say, Don...
I suppose if you found a canoe, you'd want to be an Indian guide.
Silly, me an Indian guide. Say, Don...
A couple of feathers in your hair wouldn't hurt.
All right, forget it. I found a fountain pen on Sunset Boulevard. I put an ad in the paper. Nobody claimed it. So it's mine.
What paper did you put the ad in?
In the Louisville Courier Journal. It ran 3 days. Now, Don...
Gee, does Sunset Boulevard go that far?
Get a map and don't annoy me. Now, Don, if I can get a word in edgewise here... We're almost through with this first program, aren't we?
Just about, Jack. All we have left is Phil's number, and that'll about wind up the show.
Well, then look. I'm going to run along. You see, Rochester's downstairs waiting for me in the car, and I've got to rush home. You see, I'm writing an article for the Saturday Evening Post, and I want to get it off tonight.
You must have found a bottle of ink, too.
Yes, and some stationery and stamps and everything. Is it okay, Don?
Sure, go right ahead, Jack. I'll take care of everything.
All right. Well, so long, Don. So long, fella. See you next Sunday.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
So long,
Phil.
See you next week.
Well, come on, Phil. Let's get going.
Okay, Don. Hit it, boys. Rochester, Rochester, watch out. You don't honk at red lights, you stop for them.
Well, our brake's in a delicate condition.
Well, then you can shut off the motor.
Boys, if I shut off this motor, even the Blue Fairy couldn't start it.
Just watch your driving, that's all.
Okay. I sure liked your program tonight, boys.
You did? Well, that's good. Which gag did you like the best?
The one about you giving everybody a raise. That was a good one.
It wasn't any joke, Rochester. I'm giving the whole cast more money this year.
You are?
Yes.
Well, boss, has my status quo been affected by this bolt from the blue?
What do you mean?
In other words, when I get my check tomorrow, am I going to be grinning or groaning?
Now, Rochester, let's get this straightened out right now. When I say I'm giving a raise, I mean I'm giving an increase to my associates on the radio.
Uh-huh.
You see, you're connected with me in a private capacity. That is, you're in a domestic category.
Uh-huh.
So in a nutshell, Rochester, I regard you as just a butler. Not an actor.
Just a butler?
Yes.
Boss, did you see our last picture?
Don't change the subject. Anyway, Rochester, I can't see where you have any cause for complaint. You're doing all right.
Bill Robinson's got a yacht.
I don't care what Bill Robinson's got. And if you're not careful, you're liable to be first mate on it. Never saw anybody in my life that complains about... Hey, wait a minute. Rochester! Rochester, stop the car!
What's the matter, boss?
Quick, stop the car! pardon me, miss. Are you going towards Beverly Hills? I said, are you going towards Beverly Hills? Drive on, Rochester. Oh, well. Stop laughing. We're not home yet.
You'll never give up, will you, boy?
Never mind. And getting back to the salary you're so dissatisfied with, let me tell you a little story, Rochester. When I was a kid in Waukegan, I used to walk around the streets selling newspapers. I was hungry. And yes, I was barefoot, too. But I was happy. I didn't mind struggling because I knew that someday...
This is the last number of the first program in the new Jell-O series, and we'll be with you again next Sunday night at the same time. Say, Phil.
Yeah, Mary.
How about taking me over to the Wilshire Bowl tonight?
I'm taking the Blue Fairy.
Oh, that's right. There wouldn't be room for both of us.
News for Thrifty Housewives. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
There you have Jack Benny. From October 6th of 1940, this is Radio Vault, and you are listening to listener-supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. We are WHFR Dearborn. featuring local and independent artists. And we're in the midst of Radio Vault. We just listened to Jack Benny and Fibber McGee and company. We're about to continue with Jack Benny's routine from Las Vegas. This is actually his last appearance in Las Vegas. In 1972, as a matter of fact, and we will get to that next here on Radio Vault.
Please join Highway 61 on Friday from 2 p.m. till 6 p.m. for the best in new blues releases and Detroit Blues with DJ Kitty Love on the 89.3 WHFR.FM airwaves from Henry Ford College Radio. Friday, 2 p.m., Highway 61.
If you want to change the world, then you have to change yourself. One of the best places in the Metro Detroit area to improve your life is Henry Ford College. Henry Ford College offers dozens of degree and certificate programs, plus the opportunity to network with your peers and potential employers. Taking classes at Henry Ford College gives you the freedom to take your own career path and opens up an infinite number of career possibilities. Additionally, day and evening classes allow you the flexibility of building a schedule tailored to your busy lifestyle. For more information on admittance, financial aid, and class schedules, visit www.hfcc.edu today. That's www.hfcc.edu. So change the world, change yourself at Henry Ford College.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the world-famous Congo Room. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Congo Room proudly presents America's favorite entertainer.
Thank you.
That star of stage, screen,
radio and television.
Radio, television, and
concerts.
Concerts. Mr.
Say something, for God's sake.
Sonny and Cher.
That's close enough. I won't be that good. Thank you. Well, this is the last one. I wish I could stay another week. Wasn't that the craziest introduction? that you've ever heard. And I'll tell you who does that. That's the orchestra leader, Jack Eglash. And I let him do it whenever I play here because he's dying to be a comedian. He loves to do comedy. He's not satisfied with his name, Eglash. Now, you'd think he'd be satisfied with that. Well, that's funny enough, isn't it? Eglash, he wants to be a comedian. So I let him do all the introductions, you know. And he never mentions my name whenever I play here. I walk out like a little puppy who missed the paper, you know what I think? But he never does. And, you know, I'm not that egotistical that I think that the minute I walk out to the center of the stage that everybody knows who I am. So for those of you who have never seen me before, I'm Burt Reynolds, I think. I'm going to stand like this till you stop laughing. I'm going to think, ladies, that's as rough as I'm going to get tonight. You're not going to get any more out of me. But as I just mentioned, I hate to see these 2 weeks end. The only thing is, I'm so sick of hearing those same announcements. Not only these 2 weeks, whenever I play, I always hear the same thing. They start out exactly the same way. They say, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world-famous Congo Room. Now imagine the egotism. The world-famous Congo Room, this room. Now they don't say it's the Nevada famous or Las Vegas famous. The world-famous Congo Room. That means that in Yugoslavia, all they're talking about is this room. I assure you, four blocks from here, they don't know where the Congo Room is. They think it's in Central Africa, where it belongs. Then another thing, when they introduce stars, they never introduce me that way, but when they introduce the stars, every theater does, they usually say, and now we proudly present. It makes no difference who the star is, unimportant or important. The announcement is always the same. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we proudly present, and then they mention the star's name. Now, take, for instance, Buddy Hackett. Now, I'll admit, there's no question he's a great comedian, but proudly? Now, here's what happens. They introduce him when he plays here. He plays here a lot, you know. And they say, and now, ladies and gentlemen, we proudly present Buddy Hackett. Then Hackett walks out to the center of the stage, tells four dirty jokes, and then scratches himself. Thanks. Now, that doesn't seem to fit the word proudly. You know, if he came out first and he said, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to my show, and then scratched himself, it would make sense, you know. Anyway, why can't he scratch himself in the dressing room, for heaven's sakes? I've done it 1,000 times in this place. Proudly, you know. I feel silly tonight, last show, 12 o'clock. But I must say, I always enjoy playing here. You know, I like to play any place that's a resort. Like here, when the weather's nice, you go swimming, you got the pool, you got a lot of golf courses, you know. And I like to play in Colorado Springs because that's a resort. And, you know, and I play here about 3 times a year and about twice a year in Colorado Springs. Because it's the Broadmoor Theater's right about a block from the Broadmoor Hotel. You know? And it has everything that they've got here but gambling. You know? And it's the most... The only thing is, it's the most expensive hotel that I've ever been in my life. They charge for everything, even their own swimming pool. Now, you think in the swimming pool, you know, you're a guest. And I didn't know that, you know. And the first day I was there, I went to the pool. I got on a diving board. And I was just diving off when a lifeguard yelled, "Mr. Benny, that's a dollar and a half." See? How I was able to stop in midair, I don't know. I've seen it in the movies. I didn't think I could do it, you know. That's the only thing. Then I love to play also in Honolulu. That's because it's a resort. I was supposed to be there now, by the way. And I love any place in the Hawaiian Islands. That's where I take a vacation. I love to go there. I was so happy when we made Hawaii a state. So, happy. I was happy when Maine and Vermont became states, for heaven's sake. But you know what I do when I come here? I make a vacation out of it. I really do. I play. In fact, I played nearly all the theaters in Las Vegas, except the International, you know, the Hilton. I wouldn't play. They couldn't pay me to play a theater that size. A great big joint like that where you try to be intimate with an audience. I don't know how comedians can play a place like that, really. I'll tell you something you won't believe, what a big joint that is. Right outside of the casino, they got a men's room that seats 90 people in this thing. Imagine the money they make. You know? It's 10 cents, you know, every time you go in. And the turnover is terrific at a place like that, you know. And then when you pay 10 cents, when you go in the men's room, then a girl, she slides a Keno card under the door, you know. And then for $5, you can have your picture taken while you're in there, you see. But it's so hard to smile, you know, in a place like that. Then when you're inside the door, there's even a slot machine there, you know. You can sit there and lose a fortune in a joint like that. Now, I remember when they first opened the men's room, they had an 8-piece orchestra there. Imagine in a men's room an 8-piece orchestra. Now, that's overdoing it, you know. A violin and a piano would have been plenty, I think. Like, if you could bring somebody in to dance with, it wouldn't seem so silly, you know. But just to stand there and request numbers, I mean, what the... But every place else, I like this theater. This theater, I like the size of it and everything. That's what I like. It's just big enough, you know. When you fill up this theater, it's great. And, you know, there's a new thing now. And, of course, I always go to see the shows in town. I get here 3-4 days in advance, and I go to see shows like I go to the Stardust and the Dunes. I missed the Stardust this time because one of the light bulbs went out. I couldn't find the damn place, you know what I mean? So I went to the Dunes, and they have great spectaculars in those kind of theaters. See, like, at the Dunes, when the curtain goes up, right at the start of the show, you see 60 nude showgirls marching right in front of you while you're eating. 60 topless girls, you know. Let's see, 60 or 61. Let's see, I forget, it was 60 or 61. Let's see, 2 goes into 120. Let's see. There were 60. I must have counted the redhead twice, you know? And people ask me sometimes when I leave the theater, they ask me how I feel about nudity in the theaters. Well, I don't care. You know, here we've always had it. Now you have it in movies and everything. But you've always had it in here in Las Vegas. And I don't know. It doesn't bother me. I'm not a prude. And I feel like you do about nudity. I think it all depends on who is nude. Right? Huh? Now, Bob Hope does nothing for me. I've seen him nude. I wouldn't look at him twice, for heaven's sakes. And that goes for Toadie Fields, too. Well, if you want to see Oliver, you got to look at her twice. I mean, and they have a new thing here now with the theaters, the superstars that play here now. They only use their first names, you know. You never see, like, when Barbara Streisand plays here, you never see Streisand anymore. All you see on the marquee is Barbara. That's all you see, Barbara. You know? And Debbie Reynolds is now Debbie. And Elvis is here. It's never Elvis Presley. You know, the next time I play here, I'm going to be a superstar. Because all you're going to see on the marquee is my first name, Jack. That's all you're going to see, Jack. Let them guess who the hell I am up here. I could be Jack Carter, Jack Jones. The only thing I'm going to make him spell it, J-A-K-E. At least my sister will know who it is, you know. By the way, I have good news for you tonight and bad news. I'll tell you what it is. The good news is for me. The good news is that I just left the casino and I won $140. And you're going to get a hell of a show out of me tonight. Now, here's the bad news. You're going to get a long show because I'm not going back in there. But you see? That's the bad news. I just won $140. And I wanted you to hear it. And the bad news is you're getting a long show from me, and then you won't get... My name is Burt Reynolds. This one just came in. I don't want him to miss anything. Sometimes things happen. But what... Oh, I wanted to tell you how I happened to win the $140. There was a fellow shooting dice. I was standing near him. And when he left the crap table, he dropped a $5 chip on the floor, see? And I ran over, and I picked up the $5 chip, and then I tried to find him, because I wanted to give it to him, you see? Give it back to him. And I lost him in the crowd, you know? So I took the $5 chip and I put it on the... I went to the back of the crap table, I put it on the table, and in no time, I won $140. And you know, I wish I got the chip here. I wish I could find the fella who lost this chip, because I'd love to share my winnings with him. No, I really would. Is this a luck? I'd like somebody to have this lucky chip. I really would. You know? Lady, I'm going to give it to you. I wish we were on television now so they'd know I'm not a cheapskate. You know what I mean? Now, ladies and gentlemen, that's something else I was going to tell you about the shows that I saw in town. I went to, you know what I did last night? Last night. Two shows here, then we had two benefits. And one was at the Circus Theater. I went in there once to see a show. And you must go in there sometimes at the Circus. Because they have, besides gambling, they have all kinds of circus acts, clowns, animals, tigers, lions. They got everything in the world there, acrobats. And they had one fella there that goes on about twice a day. that's on a trapeze, and he sort of flies across the room, right over you, see, and the customers hold up dollar bills, and he grabs them in his mouth, you see, and I was so excited seeing that I held up a half a dollar, and I got his teeth, you know. And I must have held on pretty tight because I was 8 feet in the air before I landed. So I mailed his teeth back, because it had his name on it and everything. He'd probably get it, you know. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce, every time I play here, I try to get a real good co-star. I always try. And I got a fellow with me now who really is somebody I've wanted to use many times, and he was unavailable. And this fella, would you open the curtains, please? That's the comedian that I told you about. It's dying to be a comedian. Look at him. Is that funny what you're doing now? Huh? You look like a schmuck. You know what that means? Whether you know what it means or not. That's at that moment you're like. Anyway, I was saying. So I want to introduce this fella, who is a fine singer of songs, and he writes all of his own songs, you see. And he writes, and he sings a song. He writes the music. Yeah.
I heard you say at the beginning of the show that you found a $5 chip in the casino. Yeah. Well, I'm the man who lost it.
You lost that $5 chip?
Yes, I was shooting dice and I dropped it on the floor.
Uh-huh.
And also I heard you say that you won $140,
yeah,
and you would share it with the man who lost the chip.
Now, I didn't say that at all. I did not say that at all, did I? I said I would love to share it with the fella who lost the money. I didn't say I was going to do it. I said I'd love to do it, that's all. I'm not doing it. I'm not sharing it with anybody.
Oh, I thought you said that...
No, where are you sitting?
Over there with my wife, Virginia.
Well, then you evidently didn't hear it clearly, you see.
Well...
Who are you anyway? What's your name?
Gus Dupre.
Gus Dupre?
Gus Dupre, yeah.
What business are you in?
I replaced the burnout light bulbs at the Stardust.
You just loused up a whole routine. Your name is Gus?
Gus Dupre.
Gus Dupre, yeah. I see. Well, I'll tell you what I'll do, Mr. Dupre.
What?
I gave that nice lady the $5 chip, and I wouldn't take it back, but I'll give you $5. For the chip. Is that all right?
Well, fine.
Okay. Jack, let me have $5, will you, for a minute? Oh, Jesus.
You know, I'm glad the act is over. I'm so sick of keeping track of this lousy $5 every night.
You glad the show is over now?
Oh, yeah.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Betty. Thank you very much.
I'm very glad to meet you, Mr. Betty. This is all new stuff in the show. I'll tell you, there's some other stuff that we've been throwing around here you can sweep up too while you're at it. I'll tell you who that fella is. You know this is a gag, of course. He's my writer. I have one writer that I keep 52 weeks a year. And he's probably, to me, he's the best writer on television. His name is Hillard Marks. Hillard, take a bow. And he writes for me. He wrote the stinking bit we just did. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce this fellow, who, in my opinion, which I respect, is one of the finest entertainers that we have today, Mac Davis. Then I'll be back and I'll play the fiddle for you. Before you do your encore, first I want to congratulate our last show for the wonderful job you've done for 2 weeks and for the job, for the big job you've done even ahead of this show. But I'd like to ask you, Mac, how long have you been in show business? When I say how long have you been in the business, I mean where people actually got to know you.
Well, I guess altogether 2.5, 3 years.
2.5 or 3 years. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that? That's amazing, really. I've been in it all my life. And he's been in it 2.5 or 3 years, already a star. Sickening, you know? You've been in 2.5 or 3 years. Well, I must compliment you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Vinny. I appreciate it. And I tell you, coming from you, it really is a compliment because, well, you've always been my idol.
You know, you didn't have to say that. No, I just came out to tell you how good. You didn't have to return a compliment or anything. I didn't come out here for that. I just wanted to tell you how good you were. That was.
Well, I was only saying really exactly what I feel. You're my idol, and when I watch you on television, I feel like I'm watching the master at work. You're a real genius.
Now, wait a minute, please. Oh, please. No, wait, hold it. Hold it, please. Hold it. Oh, they did. No, really. You see, when you say things like that to me in front of them, then, Mac, then you embarrass me, you know?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to embarrass you. I won't go on.
Oh, no. No, no, no. I didn't mean that. The damage is done, you know. What were you saying?
What? Huh? I was only saying exactly what I feel. You're my idol, and I watch every one of your television shows.
You do, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You watch all of my shows?
Yes, I do.
Well, I'm complimented. I think that's very nice.
And Mr. Benny?
Yeah?
I was wondering if you'd mind if I offered a few little suggestions.
You have some suggestions you want to make about your idol, you mean?
Well, it's more like constructive criticism. You wouldn't mind.
No, no, I think constructive criticism is good for anyone, you know. How long did you say you've been in this business?
About 2.5 or 3 years.
2.5 or 3 years. Well, what are some of these criticisms that you have?
Well, for one thing, Mr. Benny, and... Now, I'm sure this can easily be corrected.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, what?
It's about your pacing.
My pacing?
It's not quite right. It's just a little slow.
You mean what you're referring to when I talk, my timing is off.
Right.
You mean that my timing is slow. Is that what you mean?
Well, it's not your... You know, you're a comedian, and it's all right to take your time, but... You're not a rose opening its petals.
Not a rose opening its petals? Let's see, I'm a comedian, but I'm not a rose opening its petals. Well, you know what? You may have a point there. I've had a lot of people criticize me. They say I talk too slowly, and sometimes I watch myself on television, and I can't wait till I get a sentence out. I talk so slowly. So you may be right about that, you know. So I don't mind that kind of criticism. Is there anything else that you have?
Well, yes.
You've been in this business how long, did you say?
About 2.5 or
2.5 or 3 years, I say. Well, what else? What other criticism have you?
Well, it's about that long take that you do.
You mean when I... I know what you mean. You mean after I tell a joke, the way I stare at an audience. Is that it?
I get the feeling you're surprised they're still there.
Well, in Cleveland, they weren't, if you want to know something.
You got it right.
I hit the right town.
That a baby. Yeah. Beats well, out of Searchlight.
Well, what other criticisms have you? Huh?
Jack.
What happened to Mr. Benny all of a sudden? You see, ladies and gentlemen, here what happens when a fella's only been in the business a short time. Now, I came out to be nice. Now, wasn't I sweet? Wasn't I? I came out to congratulate him, tell him how good he was, and he's been in this business such a short time that he didn't know how to take it. Now, I got something to tell you. Now, listen. I let you talk, didn't I?
Yes, sir.
Huh? I let you say whatever you wanted to say.
Yes, sir.
Now, you listen to me and listen carefully. Before you start to criticize somebody that's been in the business as long as I've been in it, you better be in it longer than 2.5 years or 3 years or 5 years or 15 years.
Mr. Benny, I really, really didn't mean to offend you.
I'm not offended at all. Just because you happen to write raindrops falling on my head doesn't...
No, I didn't write that.
You didn't.
Al David.
I don't give a damn who wrote it. Now go ahead and sing your lousy encore that you're supposed to sing.
You can only have no closing night. Wonder what got into him.
Dirty old man. He's one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life.
You damn well are.
Leave me alone. Thank you, Jack. This is one of the nicest audiences we've had, too, believe it or not, for a closing night audience, and they're always rough. Y'all have been so nice that I'm going to let you sing along with me. I know what you're thinking. I got to go to the bathroom just as bad as you do. So you can damn well sit here and bear with me throughout the whole thing. This is my philosophy of life and every show with it. It's based on the premise that God respects you when you work, but he loves you when you sing. And I really believe that. I want everybody to join in with me and let loose some noise in this house. Here's your part.
I believe in music.
Antonio Stradivari, area code 231 in this thing. No, this is a real Stradivarius. This was made in 1729. Now, I must tell you something funny, a true story. I tell a lot of true stories, you know. There was, the last time I was here, I didn't do the concert that I'm going to do tonight, but I did play the violin. And the first part of the show, there was a drunk sitting at a front table, and he was annoying me all evening. And I'm not the kind of a comedian. I don't know how to cope with a drunk. Some people can do it. You know, Milton Berle can, Johnny Carson. They know how to handle drunks, but I don't know how to handle them. And he kept bothering me until finally the other people at his table kept him quiet, you see. Then later on, I came on with the violin, and he said the funniest thing I've ever heard, and I loved him for it, really. I came out and I said, ladies and gentlemen, this is a real Stradivarius. This was made in 1729. And the drunk looked up at me and said, did you buy it new? Now, how could a drunk think of a line like that? I would have paid a lot for that, you know, for that joke. I gave a concert not long ago in Washington, D.C. with the National Symphony Orchestra. And after the concert, I was invited to the White House for some cocktails because the president came to the concert and the vice president, some of the dignitaries, you know. So they invited me after the concert to go to the White House for some cocktails. And I had to get there late at night because I had to greet a lot of people after the concert, you see. So I got there very late at night, and I had the fiddle case in my hand, and I'm walking up the steps of the White House. I just imagine late with a fiddle case up the steps of the White House, and there are a lot of security men standing around. One of them yelled at me. He says, "Hey, fella, what have you got in that case?" So I thought as long as he didn't know who I was, I'd have a little fun, you know. So I yelled back, "I got a machine gun in it." And he said, "Thank God we thought it was your violin with us." But I am going to play a number that I actually do when I give concerts. It is one that I do nearly every concert. It's a popular, that is if the orchestra is ready. We have a sort of a small symphony. Well, they're ready. Now look how nice they look sitting out there in the symphony. Doesn't that look nice? And their famous conductor, Dr. Jack Eglash. Come on. Doctor, it's a pleasure working with you here this week. I'm glad this is a closing night.
It's been beautiful. What do you mean? It's been terrific.
Well, I know you have a few friends in the audience, personal friends, and I know you would like to tell a joke because you've been dying to be a comedian all night. So I'm going to give you a chance right now. You want to tell a joke?
Would you like me to?
I wouldn't like you to, but I want to know if you'd like to, merely because you have friends in the audience.
I don't have any friends in the audience tonight.
You haven't, huh?
No. I don't have too many friends in the band.
Well, that's because you're a lousy conductor. You know how he doesn't know one note of music. You know what he does? He stands there in front with a stick, and he does this. And when the orchestra stops playing, he quits. Knows nothing about music. You know, like Phil Harris, you very much. But if you want to tell a joke now, I know you have friends. No, if you want to tell it, you don't feel like now, huh? Now you're embarrassed. Aren't you? Huh? You're ashamed now. Tell the joke you told the first show tonight. It was a big laugh tonight.
Yeah.
Tell it.
It's true. I am very funny. This is the
You're
story.
About as funny as John Gielgud.
John Gielgud?
You don't even know who he is.
I laughed all night at him. Yeah. He's beautiful.
You're as funny as Love Story.
I laughed at that. You said
Tell
that.
The joke.
You want to hear the joke?
No, I want to hear it.
This is the story of the young gentleman of Polish descent that loved to go hunting and bought a bird dog for $100. See? And he threw it up in the air 4 times, and when it didn't fly, he shot it.
Satisfied now to conduct the orchestra for the rest for the rest of the season.
Be happy for the rest
All
of the
right.
season.
Yes. All right. So we'll go back now and play. Now I tried, didn't I?
You sure did.
Give me A, will you please? That's fine. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to play a number, a popular classic called Sigourneyvisen.
Oh,
Now, I want to show you what he's going to do conducting in love. Bro, put it on. I want to put it on. I want to show you. Now, put it on. I want him to see what you were going to do. You want to conduct that way? You know, I may never work this theater again. Well, we're going to play Zigeunerweisen or Gypsy Airs by Sarasetti, whom you wouldn't know at all, his name. I better tune up Frederick. Is there any other selection that you'd like? All right, let's do it, huh?
Thank you. You ready? Let's go. Oh, wait a minute, hold it. I forgot my mute. Who has a mute? One of you fellas? Anybody got a mute? Thank you. The mute. Now. Thank you.
liked it?
I loved it. It was delightful. The best you've ever played.
It's a lousy audience here. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to do this number on my next TV special, which will be shown January 18th. And I'm going to play it with the Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra, which will be conducted by Zubin Mehta, not this man. Zubin Mehta will conduct this. And I'm going to have a lot of wonderful guest stars on my show. It's going to be a dynamic show. And I want you to see it. It's really going to be dynamic. Well, I got Ed Sullivan on it. You know what a dynamo he is. And I'm going to have the closest friend that I have in the whole world on the show, and that's George Burns. Now, George is going to be on the show. And when we go on the late, late shows and we talk about each other, you always hear us tell about the dirty, lousy, filthy tricks that George Burns has played on me, you know, since, well, for 50 years. And I fall for everything. And sometimes he says the most awful things to me. You know what he said to me the other day? If this weren't true, I wouldn't even dare tell it to you. You know? But first, I wouldn't even tell it on the first show. But this is, you know, I go annually for a physical examination. And I had just gone for one, and my last doctor that I usually go to is my proctologist. Now, you know what a proctologist is. You know, he doesn't look down your throat. You know what I mean? A proctologist. My last doctor was my proctologist, and then I was through. And when he finished, and then as we chatted for a while, and as I was leaving, he says to me, Jack, didn't you just have a birthday? I said, yes, and I told him how old I was. And he said, well, I must say that really to me, you don't look a day over 58 or 59. And I thanked him for the compliment. And the next day, George Burns called me because he wanted to know how the test came out, the examination. And I told him, my last doctor told me that I didn't look over 58 or 59. And Burns says, I know, but look where he was looking. Why I would look younger there, I don't know. But I'm going to have Bob Hope on the show, too, because, we exchange shows every year, Bob and I. I can't afford Bob Hope. Nobody can, because he's the richest actor that we have in all of show business. There's nobody as rich as Bob Hope, you see. And the reason I know he must be terribly rich, because he speaks of Onassis as being well off, you know. I'll tell you who else I'm going to have on the show. The fellow that I first mentioned when I came on, Burt Reynolds. Not because of that centerfold picture of him in the nude. Cosmopolitan magazine. That's not the reason. I like him because he's clever. He's a fine actor. He's a great comedian. He's a writer. He's everything. He didn't need that picture in the nude. You know, and if you want to know something, we've all had those offers. You see, I have the same offer from Popular Mechanics. They wanted a centerfold of me, a nude picture, absolutely nude, lying on my stomach on top of a lawnmower. Well, for God's sakes, I wouldn't take a chance like that for $1 million. And get cut and everything. I don't want to go through that again. You know? I was 8 days old when that happened to me with those guys. Our rabbi was an Indian at that time.
He used a tomahawk in this thing. I'll go on like Groucho Marx. It was one thing talking about. You know, ladies and gentlemen, actually, I have no finish to my show, and I never have a finish. And you know why I never have a finish? Because I never worry about finishes. I don't think endings mean a damn thing. I think the most important part of a show are the first 10 minutes of a show. I think that then, when you get rolling, it's all right. I think a finish means nothing. So I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll play a little bit of the Mendelssohn Concerto that I do when I give a concert. And those of you who like my show will applaud, and those of you who didn't will applaud anyway. What are you going to do, just sit there? You know? This is. And those of you who know the words, sing along with me on the Mendelssohn Concerto. Give me a little of that.
All right, we've been listening to Jack Benny and his last appearance in Las Vegas from November 28, 1972. And you are listening to Radio Vault on listener-supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. It's WHFR Dearborn. Featuring local and independent artists, we're getting set for our final hour of today's Radio Vault. That recording of Jack Benny's Las Vegas routine actually reached us maybe a year or so ago. Pretty rare, actually. That's his theme, Love and Bloom. And there you have it. Once again, Jack Benny from November 28, 1972. He passed away about 2 years later after quite a legacy on radio, television, and he did some films as well. Not as popular in the film industry, but nonetheless, a legendary comedian who always held the top spot in the ratings, always, as I mentioned earlier, competing with Fibber McGee and Molly. Well, coming up next, we have got just for you the Lux Radio Theater and Casablanca from 1940. That's coming up next on Radio Vault. 89.3 WHFR, the station making the waves.
Pull up a coffin and tune into The Crypt on WHFR.FM 89.3 every other Tuesday from 4 to 6 p.m. The Crypt, digging up the gravest mix of doom, gloom, death, punk, horror, and Halloween on the only station making waves, WHFR Dearborn.
The Henry Ford College Learning Lab is your central location for academic support. They strive to assist students and faculty with techniques that are evidence-based and will increase your academic success. The Learning Lab offers in-person and online services to help you succeed. They offer tutorial assistance provided by faculty, professional, and student tutors, one-on-one academic assistance, including strategies for improving test-taking and studying, workshops and presentations to classes or groups on strategies for learning success, study groups and review sessions on a variety of subjects, hands-on learning resources, such as anatomical models in our bone room, computers, printing, copying, and scanning. For more information, please visit hfcc.edu/learnlab.
Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Lux presents Hollywood. The Lux Radio Theater brings you Hedy Lamarr, Alan Ladd, and John Loder in Casablanca, with Edgar Barrier. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. Cecil B. DeMille.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. One bright January morning, just a year ago, the city of Casablanca in French Morocco woke up and found itself famous. It had entertained many mysterious visitors from a world at war. But never before, the President of the United States and the Prime Minister of Great Britain. Within a few days, Warner Brothers had rushed their screen drama, Casablanca, to the theaters of the nation, and people marveled at a Hollywood miracle. Actually, of course, the picture had been planned and filmed during the months previous, because Casablanca had an exciting story to tell even before the President and Prime Minister arrived. It's a story of love and hate, in a background of adventure and sudden death. Tonight we bring you that drama with a cast that producers dream about. Hedy Lamarr and Alan Ladd and John Loder. Hedy came back to town last week from Texas with the applause of the soldiers at Camp Hood still ringing in her ears. And so we borrowed her from Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, where she's just completed the picture, Heavenly Body. Alan Ladd, of course, came to us from Paramount. I'm hoping to have Alan for my next picture, following the story of Dr. Wassel. Getting these players together in one drama is a talent scoop of the first magnitude in Hollywood, and it's unlikely that it would ever happen in a picture, because our stars are under contract at different studios and are kept so busy on their home lots that they aren't loaned out, as the phrase goes, as the curtain rises on the first act of Casablanca, starring Alan Ladd as Rick, Hedy Lamarr as Ilse Lund, and John Loder as Victor Laszlo, with Edgar Barrier as Renault. Everyone knows that name today, Casablanca. Before the war, Casablanca was just another small seaport, with its face to the Mediterranean and its back to the North Atlantic. But then, as the Nazi lash descended upon Europe, hordes of refugees, like the boiling waters of a burst dam, flooded into the sanctuary of its white walls. Those with money enough or influence enough obtained exit visas bearing the seal of the Vichy government and fled to Lisbon, and from Lisbon to the Americas. The others just waited and waited. But all who came to Casablanca were not refugees. The German intelligence was always there when anything unusual occurred. As, for example, the murder of two Nazi couriers.
Major Strasser, may I present Captain Reynaud, police prefect of Casablanca.
Unoccupied France welcomes you, Major.
Thank you.
You may find the climate of Casablanca a trifle warm.
We Germans must get used to all climates, Captain, from Russian to the Sahara. But perhaps you were not referring to the weather.
Oh, what else, my dear Major?
The murder of the couriers. What has been done about it?
Captain Reynaud already knows who the murderer is.
Excellent. He is in custody?
There is no hurry. Tonight, he will come to Rick's.
That cafe, Major, I pointed it out to you.
Everybody in Casablanca comes to Rick's, but this one will not leave.
Frankly, Captain, I did not journey here simply to find an assassin. The real reason for my visit is Victor Laszlo.
I thought as much.
Has he arrived yet?
Yes, this afternoon, with a very beautiful young woman. I met them.
Renaud, Laszlo must not leave Casablanca. I have learned that he is prepared to offer a fabulous bribe for a visa to Lisbon.
I am prepared to refuse it.
Where is he staying, you know?
Major, I even know the time he intends to bathe.
I would like to talk with Laszlo. Can it be arranged?
Undoubtedly, he too will be at Rick's tonight. Everybody comes to Rick's. Or did I mention that before?
Yes, monsieur?
I reserved a table. Victor Laszlo.
Yes, monsieur Laszlo, just one moment, please.
Victor, are you sure we should have come here, so in public?
There is often the greatest safety in what appears to be a risk.
I see no one here who got his description.
Neither do I. He'll be here, though.
Excuse me. I have a ring here.
What?
A ring. I'm forced to sell it at a great sacrifice.
Well, I hardly think that...
Perhaps the lady. The ring is quite unique. You see?
That's it, Victor.
Yes, it's a very interesting ring. What's your name?
Berger, monsieur. I recognized you from the newspaper photographs. We read 5 times that you were killed in 5 different places.
As you see, 5 different places? As you can see, it's true each time. Thank heaven we found you, Berger. I'm looking for a man by the name of Ugarte. He's supposed to help us.
He's here somewhere. You'll need all the help you can get.
Yes, this time they mean to stop me.
Oh, I'm so afraid for you, Victor.
We've been in difficult places before.
Why? We're just coming back.
That's all, Berger. Meet us at the bar later.
Oh, I don't think we want to buy the ring, but thank you for showing it to us.
Yeah?
It's Franz, Rick. Franz Ugarte.
Come in.
Hi, what do you want?
Oh, nothing much, Rick. Too bad about those German couriers, eh?
Well, they got a break. Yesterday, they were just 2 clerks. Today, they're among the honored dead.
You will forgive me for saying this, Rick, but you are a very cynical person.
I forgive you.
You despise me, don't you?
Well, if I gave you any thought, I probably would.
But think of the poor refugees who must rot in Casablanca if I did not help them. Is it so bad that through ways of my own I provide them with exit visas?
For a price, Ugarte, for a price.
Oh, those poor wretches who cannot meet Renault's price, I get it for them at half. Is that so parasitic?
Well, I don't mind a parasite. I just object to a cut-rate one.
Well, after tonight, I'm through with the whole business. I'm leaving Casablanca. Rick, look.
What?
Look, Rick, look. Do you know what these papers are? Letters of transit signed by Marshal Vagon. With his signature, they cannot be rescinded or questioned. Not even by Renault.
So?
So, I'm selling these for more money than I ever dreamed of. And then, goodbye.
What are you trying to say, Ugarte?
Rick, I have many friends in Casablanca. But because you despise me, you are the only one I trust. Will you keep these letters for me?
How long?
For an hour, perhaps, till my client arrives.
Okay. But I don't want them here overnight.
Oh, thank you, thank you. No fear of that. Now, Rick, I hope you are more impressed with me. I'll go to share my luck now with your roulette wheel.
Hey, wait a minute.
Yes?
I heard a rumor that those Nazi couriers were carrying letters of transit.
No. Yes, poor devils. I heard that rumor, too.
You're right, Ugarte. I am a little more impressed with you.
Good evening, Rick.
Well, hello, Renault.
Hear that plane, Ricky? It's going to Lisbon. You'd like to be on it?
Why, what's in Lisbon?
The Clipper that goes to America. Rick, I have often speculated on why you do not return to America.
There's a roulette table inside for people who like to speculate.
Yes. I noticed Ugarte just went in.
Yes, he'll come out poor.
What was it, Rick? Whatever brought you to Casablanca? Did you abscond with the church funds back home? Did you run off with somebody's wife? I should like to think that you killed a man. It's the romantic in me.
Well, I'll tell you. It was a combination of all three.
Someday I'll find out. Oh, Rick, before you came, I took the liberty of escorting a visitor to your best table, a German, Major Strasser. I wanted him to be on hand for the excitement, because tonight we're making an arrest here.
Again?
This time a murderer. Please don't warn him, Rick.
Now, look, I stick my neck out for nobody.
And I'm staging the arrest here
out of my high regard for you. It'll interest the customers.
And perhaps Major Strasser.
Perhaps. Cassell.
Yes, Captain.
You will find Franz Ugarte inside at the roulette table.
Yes.
Arrest him for the murder of the German couriers.
Yes, Captain.
Or he'll be carrying some letters of transit. Be sure you get them.
Yes.
Louis, there's more than Ugarte on your mind tonight.
Oh, you're very observant, Rick. There are many exit visas sold in this cafe, but we know that you have never sold them. That is why I permit you to remain open.
No, I thought it was because I let you win at roulette.
Oh, that's another reason. Rick, a man arrived today in Casablanca on his way to America. Right now he's at the bar. He will offer a fortune to anyone who will furnish him with an exit visa.
What man?
Victor Laszlo. Why, Ricky, this is the first time I've ever seen you so interested.
Laszlo has succeeded in interesting half the world. I wonder how he'll manage it.
Manage what?
His escape.
He escaped from a concentration camp, and the Nazis have chased him all over Europe. But this is the end of the chase, Rick.
10,000 francs says it isn't.
Make it 5,000. I'm only a poor, corrupt official. No, no matter how clever he is, he still needs an exit visa. I should say two. He's traveling with a lady.
He'll settle for one.
Oh, I think not. I have seen the lady.
Now, where did you get the idea that I might help Laszlo?
Because I know all about you, Ricky. Enough at least to know you're more a sentimentalist than a cynic. I know that in 1935 you ran guns into Ethiopia. I know that in 1936 you risked your neck with the loyalists in Spain.
And got well paid on both occasions.
The winning side would have paid you much better.
Maybe. Louis, why do you want to keep Laszlo here? Gestapo spank?
You overestimate the influence of the Gestapo. In Casablanca, I'm the boss. I do not interfere with them, nor they. Cassell is a very noisy policeman. Laszlo, Mademoiselle Lund, welcome to Rick's.
You welcomed us this afternoon at the airport, Captain.
I welcome everyone everywhere. Oh, my profoundest apologies for the recent disturbance, most unfortunate.
Yes, for the poor man who was killed. Horrible.
Horrible, mademoiselle? But then may I ask, why did you remain?
Oh, permit me. Major Strasser, Mademoiselle Lund, Monsieur Laszlo.
We've heard of you, Major.
The Major asked, why did you remain after the regrettable shooting?
We were here to meet someone. He's not yet arrived. Ilza, I think perhaps we should leave now.
It might be wiser, monsieur. I do not think your friend will come. They just removed the body of Franz Ugarte to the morgue.
Franz Ugarte?
Your friend.
I'm sorry, Captain, but the name Franz Ugarte means absolutely nothing to me.
Oh, come now, monsieur. We know that
you... This is enough for tonight. Tomorrow at 10, Monsieur Laszlo, in the captain's office. With mademoiselle.
We are not under your authority, Major. This is French soil. Captain Renault, is it your order that we come to your office?
Let us say it is my request.
Very well.
At 10 o'clock in the morning. Good night.
Sleep well, Major. Now, my friends, after all this unpleasantness, a little relaxation. Sit down, please. Waiter.
Yes, Captain.
A bottle of the best champagne. Put it on my bill.
Oh, now, please.
Oh, they put it on my bill. I tear the bill up. It's just a little game we play.
We shouldn't stay. We seem to be the only ones left.
I'm afraid Ricky will be very cross with me. Killing one customer and driving the others away. Oh, but that's no reason why you shouldn't be entertained. Sam.
Even, Captain.
Sing something nice for my guest, Sam.
Sure, boss.
Mademoiselle, I had been informed you were the most beautiful woman ever to visit Casablanca. That is a gross understatement.
Thank you. You're very kind. Captain, that man's singing.
He's been staring at you for the past 5 minutes, Ilza.
I've seen him before somewhere.
Oh, Sam? Oh, he came here from Paris with Rick.
Rick? Who is he?
Mademoiselle, you are in Rick's. And Rick is, well...
Is what?
Well, he is the kind of a man that... Well, if I were a woman and I were not around, I would be in love with Rick. No offense, monsieur.
If you both won't think me terribly rude, will you excuse me a moment? I want to talk to Sam.
To Sam? Of course, my dear.
Hurry back, mademoiselle.
With all your faults, I love you still.
Hello, Sam.
Miss Ilsa. Never expected to see you again.
Been a long time.
Yes, miss.
Where is he, Sam?
Why, who, miss?
Rick.
I don't know. I ain't seen him all night.
Will he be back?
Not tonight no more. He ain't coming. He went home.
Does he always leave so early after a shooting? Oh, Sam, you used to be a much better liar.
Leave him alone, Miss Ilsa. You're bad luck to him.
Sam, play it once, for old time's sake.
I don't know what you mean.
Play it, Sam, as time goes by.
I can't remember it, Miss Ilsa.
Please. Sing it, Sam.
Oh, Miss Ilsa. You must remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. And when two lovers woo, they still say...
I thought I told you never to play that.
Now you've done it.
Oh, Rick, come here. I want you to meet some charming people.
Well, hello, Elsa.
Hello, Rick.
Oh, you two know each other. Well, then you also know Monsieur Victor Laszlo?
No.
Oh.
One hears a great deal about Rick in Casablanca.
And about you everywhere.
Won't you join us for a drink? This is the most interesting cafe, even without the gunplay. I congratulate you.
And I congratulate you.
What for?
For your work.
Thank you. I try.
We all try. You succeed.
Well, I can't get over you two knowing each other.
I wasn't sure you were the same. Let's see. The last time we met, wasn't it in Paris?
Well, that shouldn't be too hard to remember. It was the day the Germans marched in. The Germans wore gray. You wore blue.
Ilse, I don't wish to be the one to say it, but it is late.
Yes, so it is. Carl, the bill.
Forget it, Carl. It's my party.
Oh, it is. We're all in all a most unusual evening.
We'll come again.
Do that.
Will you say goodnight to Sam for me?
Sure.
There's still nobody in the world who can sing as time goes by like Sam.
He hasn't done it in a long time. Good night.
Oh, I'd like just one word with Rick, Monsieur Laszlo. And then if you wish, I'd be delighted to drive you to your hotel.
Thank you. We'll wait outside. A very puzzling fellow, this Rick. Just what sort is he?
I really can't say. I met him in Paris. We were once acquaintances.
In just a few minutes, Mr. DeMille presents Hedy Lamarr, Alan Ladd, and John Loder in Act Two of Casablanca. And now, Mr. DeMille returns to the microphone.
Act Two of Casablanca, starring Alan Ladd as Rick, Hedy Lamarr as Ilse, and John Loder as Victor, with Edgar Barrier as Renault. It's hours later, and in Rick's cafe, a solitary lamp still burns. Rick sits at a table staring into an empty highball glass. And in the shadows, Sam fingers the keyboard quietly.
Boss, ain't you going to bed?
Mm-mm. Not right now.
Well, ain't you planning on going to bed in the near future?
No. Go on, keep playing, will
you? Okay. Boss, let's get out of here. There ain't nothing but trouble for you here.
He's coming back. I know she's coming back.
Well, we could take the car, you and me, and drive till morning. We go fishing somewhere and stay until she leaves.
Ugade dies and she walks in. One out, one in. Of all the joints and all the towns and all the world, she walks in a mine. Hey, what's that your plan?
Oh, just a little something of my own.
Now, stop it. You know what I want to hear.
No, I don't.
Now you played it for her, you can play it for me.
Yes, boss. Boss, listen.
What?
You got company.
And I was counting on it.
Rick, may I talk to you?
So long, boss. Miss Ilse, you shouldn't have come.
Why one drink?
No.
Why did you have to come to Casablanca?
I wouldn't have come if I'd known you were here. Believe me, Rick, it's true.
What about your voice? Still the same. Rick, dear, I'll go any place with you. We'll get on a train together and we'll never stop.
Don't, Rick. Please don't. I understand how you feel.
How long did I know you, honey?
Oh, I didn't count the days.
I did. Every one of them. Mostly I remember the last one. Paris. The wild finish. Guy waiting at a station in the rain with a marriage license in his pocket and a funny look on his kisser because a sledgehammer just hit him between the eyes.
Can I tell you a story, Rick?
There's a go. I'll finish.
I don't know the finish yet myself.
Okay. Maybe one will come to you as you go along.
It's about a girl who met a man she's heard about all her life. A great and courageous man. And soon, everything this girl knew or ever became was because of this man. She looked up to him and worshipped him with a feeling she thought was love.
I've heard best stories in my time. Tell me, was he the guy you left me for? Was it Laszlo? Or were there a few others in between?
Rick.
A lot of people ran away from Paris that day. I wonder if they all left notes. You left a note, didn't you? Sam brought it to me at the railroad station. I guess it was a love light in my eyes that helped him spot me and all that mob.
Yes, I wrote you a note. I know it was cowardly, but I just couldn't face you.
I cannot go with you or ever see you again. Remember? I must not ask why. You just believe that I love you and God bless you. It's a literal translation, Elson.
I thought if I came here tonight and spoke to you, I could make you understand. I'm sorry, Rick.
Don't give up, honey. I'm just a slow study. Call again sometime and give it another whirl.
We have searched Ugarte's apartment again, Major. No luck. Someone else must have them.
And I strongly suspect that someone is Rick. I suggest you continue the search in the cafe.
If Rick has the letters of transit, he is much too smart to let you find them there.
You give him too much credit. Just another blundering American.
We must not underestimate American blundering, Major. I was with them when they blundered into Berlin in 1918.
As to Laszlo, we want him watched. 24 hours a day.
Yes, it's 10 o'clock, Major, and he and the girl are waiting now for us.
Send them in.
Send them in, Cassell. I do not think we're going to get very far with Laszlo this morning.
Nevertheless, there's no loss in making him the obvious offers.
Only a loss of time. Oh, good morning. I'm delighted to see you both.
Laszlo, mademoiselle.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Won't you sit down?
Thank you.
Laszlo, we will not mince words.
Good. Let's begin by saying that I'm an escaped prisoner of the Third Reich, from whom no one ever escapes.
I do not deny you are an exceptional man. Monsieur, you say Third Reich as if you expect there will be others.
I take what comes, Major.
So far, yes. You have been fortunate enough to elude us. You have reached Casablanca. I intend to make certain you stay here.
Whether or not you succeed, Major, is, of course, problematical.
Not quite. On all exit visas issued here in Casablanca, Captain Renault's signature is necessary. Captain, would you think it possible that Laszlo will receive a visa?
And I'm afraid not, Monsieur.
Well, perhaps I'll like it here.
And you, Mademoiselle?
You needn't be concerned about me.
As a matter of fact, you could both be on your way to Lisbon this very night.
But, of course, under certain conditions. Well, Major, what are your terms?
As leader of the underground movement, you know who the other leaders are. In Paris, Athens, Prague, Amsterdam...
And Berlin?
Furnish me their names and exact whereabouts, and you will have your visa immediately.
And the honor of serving the Third Reich.
Major, what if he did give them to you? What if you did track them down and kill them? From every corner of Europe, hundreds, thousands would rise and take our places. Even Nazis can't kill that far.
You make only one mistake. In the event anything unfortunate should occur to Monsieur Laszlo, no one could take his place.
Thank you.
You wouldn't dare interfere with him here. This is still unoccupied France.
Any violation of neutrality will reflect on you, Captain.
Monsieur, so far as it is in my power, that neutrality will be respected.
Are you finished with us?
For the moment, yes.
Then good day. Come, Ilse.
Your next step toward securing a visa is what, Monsieur?
I don't know.
Well, let me save you some time. Sooner or later, the man to see will be Senor Ferrari, and he operates the Blue Parrot Cafe across the street from your hotel. Good day, mademoiselle.
Hello, Ferrari. I saw the supply truck come in. I thought I'd stop by for the American cigarettes.
But why yourself? My boy will bring them over.
Every time he does, he orders a little bit short.
Carrying charges, my boy. Carrying charges. I'm glad you're here, Rick. I want to talk to you. The news about Ugarte upset me very much.
Now, look, you don't feel any sorrier for Ugarte than I do.
Of course not. What upsets me is that no one knows where those letters of transit are.
Practically no one.
If I could lay my hands on them, I could make a fortune.
And so could I. And I'm a poor businessman.
I have a proposition for whoever has those letters. I'll handle the entire transaction, get rid of the letters, and take all the risk for a small percentage. That's the proposition I have for whoever has those letters.
Well, I'll tell him when he comes in.
Rick, I think you know where they are.
Renault and Strasser think so, too. That's really why I came over here, to give them a good chance to tear my place apart.
Excuse me, senor.
Yes?
There's a man who wishes to see you. Monsieur Laszlo.
I was rather expecting him. Send him in.
Is he alone?
There is a lady also. She said she would wait outside.
But she will not wait alone, hey, Rick?
Well, suppose you just concentrate on Laszlo. Hey, Ferrari?
Send him in, Sasha. The back way. A little courtesy for Rick.
Good morning.
Hello, Rick.
I'm sorry about last night.
Doesn't matter.
The story had me a little confused, or maybe it was the bourbon.
Forget it.
You can repeat it now. I'm reasonably sober.
I don't think I will.
Why not? After all, I got stuck with a railway ticket.
All right. Victor Laszlo is my husband.
Well, what do you know?
And he was, even when I knew you in Paris.
I don't believe it.
There seems to be so much you don't believe.
What about it?
It happened almost a year before I met you. He loved me, and I thought I loved him.
Soon after we were married, he had to leave France.
And this time he has to leave Casablanca?
Yes, he must. Oh, you have so changed, Rick. The Rick I knew in Paris, I could tell him, but not you. I'll be leaving Casablanca soon, and I hope we'll never meet again. If we leave it that way, maybe we'll remember those old days and forget last night.
Well, I'm not leaving Casablanca. I'm settled now. Above a saloon, you walk up one flight of stairs. I'll expect you.
It will take a miracle to get you out of Casablanca, Monsieur Laszlo. And the Germans have outlawed miracles.
I got tired of waiting, Victor. Do you mind?
Sit down, mademoiselle, please. You see, as leader of all illegal activities in Casablanca, I am an influential and respected man, but I am helpless to do anything for Monsieur Laszlo. You, however, are a different matter.
He thinks it might just be possible to get an exit visa for you.
To go alone?
Yes.
We are only interested in two visas, senor.
Please, Ilse, you must get to America. And believe me, somehow, sometime, I'll join you.
What if things were different? What if I had to stay and there was only one visa? Would you take it?
Yes, I would.
Then why didn't you leave me in Lille? When I had trouble getting out of there, or in Marseille, when I was ill, and you were in desperate danger every second. Why didn't you leave me then, Victor?
I meant to. But something always held me up.
I, too, am a very sensitive man, Monsieur. I know.
I happen to love her very much.
So, for the present, Signor, we'll go on looking for two visas. Thank you.
I am moved to make a suggestion. You are aware of Ugarte and the letters of transit?
Yes, slightly.
I'll venture to guess that Ugarte left those letters in Rick's cafe. He is a difficult customer, but it is worth the chance.
You have been very patient, senor. Good day.
Now, what's all this about?
A near riot in your own cafe. You don't even bother to get up and see for yourself.
I've got other things on my mind. What happened?
Some German officers started to sing the Watch on the Rhine. They wanted the customers to join in.
Well,
they did. Except what they sang sounded more like La Marseillaise. Oh, with my usual tact, I handled the situation perfectly. Now, Rick.
Hmm?
My men gave this place a rather thorough going over this morning.
Yeah, we just barely got it cleaned up in time to open.
Yes, I told my men to be especially destructive. You know how that impresses Germans. Where are the letters, Rick?
You see, Captain, the situation is not as much under control as you believe. That song is for Bolton. How dare they sing it?
Now, my dear Major, we cooperate with your government, but we cannot control the feelings of these refugees.
Captain, are you entirely certain which side you are on?
Oh, I blow with the wind, Major. And right now, the prevailing breeze is from Vichy.
Hmm. Well, I have been thinking. It is too dangerous for us to let Laszlo leave Casablanca, but it may also be too dangerous to let him stay. We know all of North Africa is honeycombed with traitors just waiting for someone to lead them.
Yes, it poses an intricate problem.
There's one man who could solve it.
Who?
He just walked in. Victor Laszlo. I'm a very bright boy, Laszlo. I figured you came here to see me, and I figured you preferred seeing me in my office, alone.
You do nothing but bewilder me.
But you hope I may also be able to help you.
You told me once you knew of my activities. Then you must know how important it is that I get out of here to help continue the work of a very great movement.
The problems of the world are beyond me, Laszlo. I'm just a saloon keeper.
My friends in the underground have told me differently. They mentioned Spain and Ethiopia and a strange tendency of yours to be always with the underdog.
Well, I found it a very expensive hobby. But then I never was much of a businessman.
Are you enough of a businessman to appreciate an offer of 100,000 francs?
I appreciate it, but I don't accept.
200,000?
Make it 1,000,000 francs or 10 francs, the answer is still no.
There must be some reason why you refuse to sell the letters.
There is. I suggest you ask your wife.
I beg your pardon?
I said ask your wife.
Where are you going?
Oh, I thought I mentioned it. There's a meeting of the underground.
Oh, please don't go, Victor. I'm frightened. Look. Look out the window.
I don't have to, darling. I'm used to being trailed.
What's going to happen, Victor?
Who knows, Ilse, dear? Strasser now threatens to find some excuse to put me quietly away in jail.
All the more reason why you must stay here tonight.
I'm frightened too, Ilse, but what can I do? Hide in a hotel room or carry on the best I can?
Whatever I'd say, you'd carry on. Victor, why didn't you tell me about Rick? You saw him, didn't you?
Apparently he has the letters.
Yes?
But no intention of selling them. You'd think that if sentiment wouldn't persuade him, then money would.
Did he give you any reason?
He suggested that I ask you.
Ask me?
Ilse, when I was in the concentration camp, were you lonely in Paris?
Yes, Victor, I was.
I know what it is to be lonely. Is there anything you wish to tell me?
No. No, there isn't.
My dear, I love you very much.
Yes, I know. Victor, whatever I do, will you believe me that I...
You don't even have to say it. I'll believe you. Good night, dear.
Good night, Victor. Please be careful.
Pause now for station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
And you are listening to Radio Vault on WHFR Dearborn, the station that makes waves at 89.3 and WHFR.FM.
In 2 minutes, Mr. DeMille and our stars Alan Ladd, Hedy Lamarr, and John Loder will return in Act 3 of Casablanca. And now, here's our Hollywood reporter, Libby Collins. Greetings, Libby. What's new?
Well, for one thing, Mr. Kennedy, my hat. What do you think of it?
Your hat, Libby? Why, it's nice. Very nice. Yes, I like it.
Oh, come on now. Stop hedging. What do you really think of it?
To tell the truth, Libby, I hardly noticed the hat. I was looking at you.
Well, Mr. Kennedy, that's a compliment. But just let me turn around. Now look.
Oh, I see. It's really quite a hat. Libby, that must be very new.
It is, but well, how would you know?
Well, it's so sort of simple.
Not one of those dizzy numbers that looks as though it might fly off into space any minute.
Mr. Kennedy, you're an observant man. This is the newest thing. The profile cloche. It fits snugly on the head, and it's meant to frame the face, not take attention away from it.
I think I begin to see why you wore that little hat tonight, Libby.
Of course. To show that it's more important than ever for a woman to have nice, smooth skin.
Sure. Because with that kind of headgear, the emphasis is less on the hat than it is on the face underneath it. Now, our producer, Mr. DeMille.
We'll report on the offstage doings of our stars after the play. But now here's the curtain for Act Three of Casablanca, starring Hedy Lamarr, Alan Ladd, and John Loder with Edgar Barrier. For nearly an hour after Victor Laszlo left for the meeting of the underground, Ilse sat motionless in the drab hotel room. Suddenly, her mind made up, she takes an object out of her husband's briefcase, walks through the dark, quiet night to Rick's cafe and up the outside stairs that lead to the second floor.
I told you this morning you'd come around. But this is a little ahead of schedule.
Rick, I had to see you.
That's what you said last night. All this has nothing to do with the letters of transit, has it? It seems as long as I have those letters, I'll never be lonely.
You can ask any price you want, but you must give them to me.
I went through all that with your husband. It's no deal.
I know how you feel about me, but I'm asking you to put your feelings aside for something more important.
Do I have to hear again what a great man your husband is? What an important cause he's fighting for?
It was your cause, too. In your own way, you fought for the same thing.
Well, I'm not fighting for anything anymore except myself.
Rick, once you loved me, if those days mean anything at all to you...
I would bring up Paris if I were you. It's poor salesmanship.
Listen to me, Rick. If you only knew the truth.
I wouldn't believe you no matter what you told me. You'd say anything now to get what you want.
You want to feel sorry for yourself, don't you? One woman has hurt you and you take your revenge on the rest of the world. Rick. Rick, please help us. If you don't, Victor will die in Casablanca.
Well, I'm going to die in Casablanca, too. It's a good spot for it.
All right. I tried. I tried to reason with you, Rick. Now I want those letters.
A gun, Ilse? Is that really a gun in your hand?
Where are the letters?
Right here in my pocket.
Put them on the table. For the last time, put them on the table.
All right, go ahead and shoot, Ilse. You'll be doing me a favor.
I can't. You know I can't. I've done nothing but make a fool of myself. Oh, I don't know what to do, what to say. I thought I would never see you again. The day you left Paris, if you knew what I went through, if you knew how much I loved you, how much I still love you.
All right, I'm crazy. I'm crazy, but I believe you. You win. Ilse, what happened? What was it? I've imagined everything in the world and none of it very pretty.
I've tried to tell you. A few months after Victor left France, word came that he was in a concentration camp. And then, not long after, another message that he was dead. Shot trying to escape. I had nothing. Not even hope. Then I met you.
Why weren't you honest with me then? Why didn't you tell me you'd been married, that he was dead or something?
Victor wanted it that way. It was his way of protecting me. I knew too much about his work. If the Gestapo found out I was his wife, it would be dangerous for me and for those working with us.
When did you find out he was still alive?
Just before you and I were going to leave, his friends came. They were hiding in a freight car on the outskirts of Paris. He was almost dead. Well, that's it, Rick.
Still a story without an ending. What about now?
Now? I don't know. Except that I'll never have the strength again to run away from you.
And Laszlo?
You'll help me, won't you? You'll see that he gets out, and then he'll have his work, all that he's been living for.
All except you.
Oh, I can't fight anymore. I don't know anymore what's right and what's wrong. You'll have to think for both of us, for all of us.
Okay. Okay, I will.
If only I didn't love you so.
Oh, Elsa. Wait a minute.
What's the matter?
Just heard a door close. Quiet. Hey, Sam. Is that you?
Yeah, boss.
What's the matter?
That Mr. Laszlo found him crawling through our cellar window.
Victor.
Come up here. Does he know you're here?
No. There was a meeting of the underground tonight. They must have been following him. Ono's men. Strasser's men.
So he picks my place to hide. That's fine.
You got some iodine, boss? He cut his hand breaking the wind in.
Oh.
Hello, Sam.
Evening, Miss Ilse.
Sam, I want you to take Miss Lund to her hotel.
What about Victor?
He got his hand, didn't he? I don't like blood on my floor. I'll go down and patch him up. And Sam?
Yeah, boss.
Miss Lund will prefer going out the back stairs.
I'm sorry about this, Rick. I've had a little trouble.
Now, forget it. Well, I guess I'd ought to take care of your hand.
Thanks. If it's all right with you, I'd like to stay here a few minutes longer.
Yeah. Don't you sometimes wonder if it's worth all this, what you're fighting for?
We might as well question why we breathe. If we stop breathing, we'll die. If we stop fighting our enemies, the world will die.
What of it?
You know how you sound, Rick. Like a man who's trying to convince himself of something he doesn't at all believe. Each of us has a destiny, for good or evil.
I get the point.
I wonder if you do. I wonder if you know that you're trying to escape from yourself, and you'll never succeed.
You seem to know all about it.
I know a good deal more about you than you suspect. I know, for instance, that you're in love with a woman. It's perhaps a strange circumstance that we should both be in love with her. No one's to blame, and I ask no explanation. I ask only one thing. You won't give me the letters of transit? All right. But I want Ilse to be safe. I ask you as a favor to use the letters to take her away from Casablanca.
You love her that much?
Apparently you think of me only as the leader of a cause. Well, I'm also a human being. Yes, I love her that much.
You should not leave your back doors unlocked, Monsieur Rick.
Yeah, that's right, Cassell. No telling who might break in.
Monsieur Laszlo, you'll come with us. We have a warrant for your arrest.
Ricky, I advise you not to be too interested in what happens to Laszlo.
Oh, come on, stop bluffing. All you can do is find him a few thousand francs. You might as well let him go now. Hey, what are you charging him with?
I haven't quite decided. Meanwhile, if by any chance you were thinking of helping him to escape...
And what makes you think I'd do that?
Because, one, you bet 5,000 francs that he would, and two, you've got the letters of transit. Don't bother to deny it.
All right, get ready for a shock, Louis. Yeah, I have the letters, but I intend to use them myself. I'm leaving Casablanca on the last plane tonight.
What?
And I'm taking a friend with me. One you'd appreciate.
What friend?
Ilse Lund. Now that ought to put your mind at rest about my wanting to help Laszlo escape. He's the last man I'd want to see get out of here.
You didn't come here to tell me this. Since you have the letters, you know very well you can fill in your names and leave any time you wish.
Yeah. We have a legal right to go, but people sometimes are held in Casablanca in spite of their legal rights. Laszlo, for instance.
What makes you think I'd want to hold you?
Ilse is Laszlo's wife. She knows things that would interest Strasser tremendously. Louis, I'll make a deal with you.
Go on.
If you could get something really big against Laszlo, something that would chuck him in a concentration camp for years, that would be quite a haul for you, wouldn't it?
Yes. Germany, Vichy would be very grateful.
Then release Laszlo now. You'll be at my place half an hour before the plane leaves. I'll arrange to have Laszlo come there to pick up the letters of transit. That will give you criminal grounds to arrest him. You take him, and Ilse and I get away.
There's something about this I don't quite understand. You were never before interested in any woman.
Well, she just isn't any woman.
I see. How do you know that I'll keep my end of the bargain, or that you'll keep your end of the bargain?
You've got Laszlo inside?
Yes.
Well, let me see him alone now. We'll make the arrangements. Open up your microphones, and you'll hear every word. You would anyway.
Ricky, I'm really going to miss you. Apparently, you're the only one in Casablanca who has even less scruples than I. Well, Rick, 40 minutes and you'll be on your way to Lisbon.
Yep.
Rick's Cafe. Oh, this place will never be the same without you.
I sold it to Ferrari. Oh, don't worry. He understands you're still the winner at roulette.
Oh, thanks. You have the letters, Rick?
Yeah, right here.
Tell me, When we searched the place, where were they?
I dropped them in Sam's piano.
Serves me right for not being musical.
Oh, here they are. You better wait in my office.
Yes, a good idea.
Hello, Elsa. Where's Laszlo?
Oh, he'll be right in. He's just paying the driver. Rick.
What?
Haven't you told Victor yet that he's going alone? He thinks I'm leaving with him.
I'll tell him later.
But it's all right, isn't it? You were able to arrange everything.
Oh, sure, sure, sure.
But Victor...
We'll tell him at the airport. The less time to think, the easier for all of us. Just trust me.
Yes, yes.
I don't know how to thank you, Rick.
Save it. There's still lots of things to do.
I brought the money. It's in this briefcase.
Forget it. You'll need it in America.
But we made a deal.
Never mind that. Here, I got the letters here. They're made out in blank and signed by General Vagon. All you have to do is fill in the blanks.
I'm sorry, Laszlo. You're under arrest again. Accessory to the murder of the couriers from whom those letters were stolen.
You're surprised about my friend Ricky. Well, the explanation is simple. Love, it seems, has triumphed over virtue.
Oh, now, take it easy, Louis. Nobody's going to be arrested. Not for a while yet.
Have you taken leave of your senses?
Yeah. Now, sit down.
Oh, Ricky, Ricky, put down that gun.
Now, look, I wouldn't like to shoot you, Louis, but I will if you don't behave.
Oh. Under the circumstances, then, I will sit down.
Yeah, and keep your hands on the table.
I'm very unhappy, Ricky.
There's a telephone right next to you, Louis. Now, pick it up and dial the airport. We don't want any trouble out there either. Remember, Louis, this gun is pointed right at your heart.
Well, that's my least vulnerable spot.
Hello?
Hello, hello? Is this the airport?
What are you talking about? This is Major Strasser.
Captain Reno, I want to speak to the operations manager.
What? Oh, go ahead, Reno.
Oh, monsieur, a man and a woman will arrive shortly at the airport.
Huh?
They will go aboard the Lisbon plane. They carry two letters of transit.
Ah!
There is to be absolutely no trouble made for them. Understand?
I'll be there right away.
Thank you.
Lisbon plane taking off in 5 minutes. This is the last call for passengers to please board the plane. Lisbon plane, 5 minutes.
You've got to hurry now, Laszlo. Take care of your luggage. We'll wait here.
Right back.
Here's a fountain pen, Louis. I think it might look nicer if you filled in the names on the letters.
You think of everything, don't you?
Yeah. And the names are Mr. and Mrs. Victor Laszlo.
Rick, why my name?
Because you're getting on the plane.
I don't understand. What about you?
Yes, what about you?
I'm staying here.
No. No, Rick. What's happened? Last night, you said...
Last night, I said I'd do the thinking for the both of us. Well, I've done a lot of it since then. It all adds up to just one thing. You're getting on that plane with Laszlo.
I won't leave you again, Rick. I won't.
Listen to me. Do you have any idea what you would have to look forward to if you stay here? We'd both wind up in a concentration camp.
I'm afraid Major Strasser might insist.
You're saying this only to make me go.
I'm saying it because it's true. Inside of us, we both know that you belong to Victor.
And what happens to you?
Well, I've got a job to do, Ilson. And where I'm going, you can't follow. I'm sounding noble now. I'm not very good at it. But it doesn't take much to see that the problems of two little people, well, they just don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world. Someday you'll understand that.
Everything's in order.
All except one thing. There's something you have to know before we leave.
Please, you don't have to explain anything.
But I'm going to, because it may make a difference to you later on. You know about Rick and me?
Yes.
But you didn't know I was with him last night at his place when you were there.
No.
She came to get the letters. She tried everything to get them and nothing worked. She did her best to convince me she was still in love with me. But that was over a long time ago. For your sake, she pretended it wasn't. Well, I let her pretend.
I understand.
Now, here are the letters. Good luck.
Welcome back to the fight, Rick. Are you ready, darling?
Yes, I am. Goodbye, Rick. God bless you.
Come on, you better hurry. You'll miss that plane.
Well, there they go, Rick. I was right. You are a sentimentalist.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You know I'll have to arrest you, of course.
Yeah, as soon as the plane takes off, Louis.
Captain Renault.
Oh, I may still win my bet, Rick.
Renault, what was the meaning of that phone call?
Victor Laszlo is on that plane.
No, stop him, stop him. What are you standing here for?
Because Monsieur Rick has a gun in my stomach.
I was willing to shoot Captain Renault. I'm willing to shoot you too, Major.
Are you crazy? Guards! Guards!
Don't call anyone, Major. I'll shoot.
I'll stop it myself. Wait! Wait! The plane must not take off! The plane must...
Someone has just shot Major Strasser.
Oh! Oh!
Telephone Lieutenant Cassell immediately. And tell him to round up the usual suspects.
Yes, Captain.
Ricky, it might be a good idea for you to disappear from Casablanca for a while. There's a free French garrison at Brazzaville. I could be induced to arrange your passage.
Hey, look, you still owe me 5,000 francs.
5,000 francs should just about pay our expenses.
Our expenses?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Louis, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
In private life, Hedy Lamarr is Mrs. John Loder. And so as we present our stars for a curtain call, I'll introduce them as Alan Ladd and Mr. and Mrs. John Loder. Although they've been married almost a year, it's our first chance to congratulate them.
Thank you, Mr. DeMille. You know, he beats me.
What do you mean? Come on, take off your coat,
Mr. Loder.
At gin rummy.
You just saved me.
We want your expert opinion on something, Mr. DeMille.
For you, Hedy, anything.
When a husband and wife are in one of your plays, do you recommend a little extra rehearsing at home?
No, definitely, John. Offhand, I can't think of anything more pleasant than going over a love scene with Hedy.
If Mrs. DeMille is listening, he's only kidding.
We better drop this.
Well, I'll change the subject, C.B., because there's something I want to say to Humphrey Bogart's fans. It was a privilege for me to play a part that he made famous, but... Well, really, nobody could play it like Bogey. And I'd like to wish him... And I'd like to wish him all the luck in the world over there in the Mediterranean area where he's entertaining American soldiers.
Well, luck and a safe return. I suppose Alan has shown you the photographs of his new daughter, Hedy.
Why, no.
Well, how'd I miss you? It seems I just have a dozen or so around or something.
Pure accident. But, her beauty reminds me of something that I must ask John as man to man.
Straight answer?
Yes, John. Now let me tell you what we've planned for next week.
What's the show, C.B.?
One of the big dramatic prizes of the past year. The Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer hit, Random Harvest. And that isn't all. Because our stars will be Ronald Coleman and Greer Garson. They're the original stars of the picture. And next Monday night, we present them both in this powerful story of a soldier and the girl who loves him. A great drama made even greater by the artistry of Greer Garson and Ronald Coleman.
It's a wonderful picture, Mr. DeMille. I'll be listening. Good night.
Goodbye.
Good night.
That applause goes from coast to coast. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a tiny island in the mid-Pacific called Tarawa. That pronunciation, incidentally, is from the National Geographic Society. That island will never be important economically. It is no rich source of raw materials. But the name of Tarawa has been written indelibly into American memory in the blood of American sons. Out of the first group of Marines who landed on Tarawa, more than half will never fight again. Is there anyone listening who can truthfully say, I can't afford to buy any more war bonds? That was just a tiny island. The continent of Europe is yet to come. The tempo of invasion is moving ever faster. That's why we have a fourth war loan drive. That's why every American who deserves that name will buy at least one extra war bond now. We must not only back the attack, we must help our boys to lead it.
And that's the way it was back in 1944, January 24th, to be exact. Lux Radio Theater in Casablanca. They couldn't get Humphrey Bogart for this show, but that's the way it was, and that's going to wrap it for us. We will see you in a week here on WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists. We'll talk to you next time. Have a good one. To the cooperation of Paramount.